The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
Hey, welcome back to the Brightside. This week we really mean welcome back. We've been off for 2 weeks and we're dying to get back at it. So, this week we're giving away Silver Surfer Black number 1. It's a Comics Pro variant edition. It's only in stores that are Comics Pro stores. Pretty limited edition. You can see it online. The first person to answer this question, what movie did we reference? And right after, John says, hey, we should use that as the question. First person to give us the movie that we referenced wins Silver Surfer Black variant edition. Let's get into the store. Let me in. Let me in.
Sorry, man. We're closed.
I got to get in. It's been 2 weeks.
Oh, man. What do you want?
Nobody will listen to me like you listen to me. How are you doing?
Oh, man. I'm here and I'm ready to go.
All right.
Glad to be here this week.
Yes. I'm glad you're here this week, too. Yeah. Had a little snafu last week?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were off at the Bruins game, so, I mean, that already put a wrench into our plans a little bit. But, yeah, I had some medical issues come up last week that put me out of sorts. So, just wasn't a good week, but everything is okay now. So, we're here and ready to go.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. It's been 2 weeks. Lots of stuff has come and gone. Let me start off with something that I was going to mention last week, which I thought was really funny and kind of the basis of what we do. It's like, so remember we started putting the t-shirts out to create conversation and stuff. And then that got me on Facebook, which I kind of avoided for the last however long that's been around, forever.
Long time
but
now.
I think you saw my aunt Carol mentioning on Facebook that she didn't know comic book stores still existed.
I did see that. that warmed my heart.
I was afraid that's what caused your medical issue.
Yeah, right.
I was like, what? She didn't know that. And what she actually said was on Facebook, she goes, I thought they only still existed on Big Bang Theory.
I know.
I was like, wow, we did a whole podcast on just that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was I thought that was a riot. And it pretty much sums up. It's like we are still in our own little world. People don't know our little world exists. And
right.
It's like, I'm sure my aunt's not the only one.
Oh, no. No. Like I said, I get being next to a movie theater, I get a lot of walk-in traffic all the time. And yeah, I hear that all the time.
Really?
I didn't even know. Yeah. It's like, I didn't even know these places were real or that I've never been into a comic book store or, you know.
Really?
It happens. Yeah, it happens all the time.
Now, do those people end up as customers or are they just kind of like going to a museum? And then
some of them, but a lot of them are, yeah, they just walk in. You can see them looking around and then they just walk out, you know. It's like they don't really want to be in a comic book store, but it's kind of like, you know.
Took that left at Albuquerque and didn't mean to.
Yeah, just coming in to see, you know, see what all the fuss is about, and then they leave.
They're afraid somebody they know is going to spot them in there.
Exactly. Let me get out of here before I see somebody I know.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
Of course, if you see somebody you know, they're in the comic book store too.
Exactly.
So
exactly. Yeah, that's that's funny. All right. So this week. You said you've already watched Jessica Jones. All of it.
Yes. I watched, my wife and I started on Sunday, and we plowed through eight or so episodes, and then Monday and Tuesday night we watched, you know, however many it took to finish it off. Two or three each night and finished it off. Yeah. Fantastic season.
Really? Thank you.
Yes.
That makes me feel better.
It was so good, and
I've watched.
You know, we talked about it. Yeah, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, saying, you know, what's the point? We weren't even sure what the point was
right.
Because, you know, it's a, you know, it's a done thing, obviously, and it's not going to go anywhere. And it was well worth it just in itself for its own merits. If it had only ever been just a one season thing, yeah, and that was it, it was still worth the, it was worth the watch. I really liked it. My wife liked it a lot too, and she wasn't a fan of really this show in general. She didn't finish season one at all. She only watched about half of it, and then I don't think she watched, I can't remember if she watched season two with me or not. I might have watched it by myself, but she was like, we got to one episode Sunday night, had to been, I don't know, whatever it was, like I said, seventh or eighth episode, and it was about 10 o'clock, which is past her bedtime, and, you know, I was about to shut it off to go to bed, and she's like, we can't stop now.
Oh, geez.
You know, so we had to watch, we watched one more, because, you know, you'll know when you get there, something pretty big happened, and it was kind of like, yeah, I can't go to bed now. I need to watch the next
one.
So,
yeah, I watched, I've only seen the first two, and I'll be honest, it's like, it's a slow burn. The first two are really, I thought were really slow.
They are. I mean, it's
almost like, actually, after the first two, I felt like that I don't even know where the story is. Because the first two is, the first one's about her, and the second one's about Patsy.
Is about Patsy, Patsy, right. Yeah. And then
Hellcat, that they never say.
Right, right. She actually, and they never do.
She puts the costume on.
She did.
Oh,
put
hell
the costume
no.
on. Yeah, which was awesome.
That was pretty funny.
Because they still got hell in there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But, yeah, because basically the first two episodes were the same story told from two different perspectives.
Yeah.
More or less. But, yeah, I don't know. I thought it picked up, and we really liked it. I thought it was really good. So I think you'll – and obviously I know you'll continue to watch
it.
But I think you'll like it. I think it was a really good season.
I'll probably do a few more tomorrow. I got lots of reading to do tomorrow, and it's supposed to rain, so I can't work. So that means I'll be able to catch up on a ton of reading, and that's good for me, not good for my wallet. Right.
No.
How are you doing on Swamp Thing?
Caught up.
Yeah.
To whatever's current.
Yeah, the three episodes, I guess.
I could kind of say the same thing about Jessica Jones. It's almost like, what's the point? But I really like it.
Do you know? Like, you know what I thought was funny? And I was going to say this last week. We talked when last 2 weeks ago. We talked about Swamp Thing. And right away, like, when we started talking about it, you said, like, this show has already been canceled.
Right.
The next
and then all
morning,
of a sudden,
the world went crazy. And
I know,
I didn't know,
like,
that many people
you
listened to us.
Right? But my thing was, is that news had already broken, like, 2 weeks earlier.
Right.
And all of a sudden, after the first episode, it was all over social media, like, crazy. And it's like, how did everybody not already know this?
Right.
Like, this news was broke.
Right.
2 weeks ago, when they talked about cutting the series down from 13 to 10 and how it had already been canceled, I thought it was already a known thing. I didn't know I was breaking the future news.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I know. And it's like, I mean, I was at work and I'm walking around and my phone's like, I'm getting these alerts from like big reputable like Twitter accounts,
CBR, and Hollywood,
and I'm like, going
Reporter and all those places.
We talked about that. I know we didn't release it till 8 a.m. this morning, but we talked about it last night. And it's like, I'm like, we're idiots.
Although we've already just screwed up because we called both of those things reputable sources.
Right. Well, but they're bigger than us.
They're bigger than us, but hardly reputable.
Right.
But yeah, that news, like I said, it. I thought it was already a known thing.
Right.
Like, I had already known for 2 weeks that it was canceled before it even started. But like I said, it really is kind of a shame because it is really good.
I got nervous when the news came out because I thought people were saying, like, after one episode,
it was canceled.
No more,
right.
Like, two wasn't coming. And I'm like,
right.
No. I'm like, that.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, why would you? It's like, no, it's in the can. We're keeping it there.
Yeah, it's like, well, we've already paid and completed it, so.
Right. Nah, I don't know. I think it's.
But what worries me about it is that we're not going to get an answer. Like, we're not going to get a resolution to whatever we see. Like, I'm sure it's going to end with some kind of you know, cliffhanger. Because the good thing with Jessica Jones, and I'm not to spoil anything for you, but they knew they were canceled going into it before they finished.
Right.
So they were able to have a resolution to the show, whereas, like, Luke Cage, you didn't. Like, we don't know
same
what happened
Iron,
to Luke Cage.
Iron Fist same ended with Iron awesome. Fist. And we were like...
They all, right, they all kind of left with cliffhangers that were not resolved. At least with Jessica Jones, like I said, the writing was on the wall and they knew, so they were able to. And that's not to say that they didn't. They still squeezed in a little bit of a teaser that we're never going to get an answer to. But at least the story, like, all the characters finished, you know, where they finished, and we can walk away and kind of feel like we know the story. And I'm kind of worried that Swamp Thing is not going to give us that either, that, you know, it's just going to end and, you know,
it's,
be out there like everything else.
I'm just wondering, I mean, quickly, I think that this is just about relocating. They're going through the same thing. Like, this is going to end up on a WB, you know, DC Universe will end up in being encompassed into the WB app or whatever it is.
I think that's definitely going to happen, but I'm worried that this will go out of production for so long of a period that they won't pick it back up. Because that integration with the Warner Brothers app and DC Universe, it's probably a year away, maybe more.
Yeah.
So I just don't know that this gets picked back up again. Like, we don't have a, unless I'm mistaken, I don't think we have an announcement for season 2 of Doom Patrol yet.
Or Titans.
We know that Titans. Well, Titans season 2, we do know.
Yeah.
But we haven't heard anything about Doom Patrol or
Doom Patrol,
you know,
just
any of that
ended.
Stuff, so. It just ended, but I feel like we had season 2 for Titans announced before the show was over. So,
well, we had it was announced that it was going in, that they were going to have it.
They might have announced Doom Patrol and we just don't remember, but I'm not quite sure that they have announced it. I mean, we know they're continuing to, you know, we still have the Harley Quinn show coming, so we know they're not stopping new content right now.
I just think, I think everybody, ourselves included, we're all getting caught up in the rumors of, like, it's almost like people want stuff to fail, so they start talking about, oh, it's not doing well, and we've been looking, you know, as we said earlier, we're not geniuses, we're not, you know, we're pretty much just idiots having fun here, but I haven't seen anything posted anywhere on actual numbers, but all these people keep telling us how poorly they're doing, but nobody ever posts numbers.
Well,
how
right,
do they
and
know?
I don't think it's a case of people are worried that DC Universe is going to cease to exist. It may just cease to exist in its current form. Like, I think this all goes to the Warner Brothers streaming service.
Right.
You know, just like Disney Plus, and it won't be called DC Universe or anything. It'll just be a category on the Warner Brothers app, just like Marvel will be a category on the Disney app.
Right.
But my thing is, at least with regard to Swamp Thing, is, you know, the producers and the actors have all been on social media thanking the viewers and talking about how it's done. So, like, in this case, I don't know if Swamp Thing is going to come back. Like, you can't expect... I saw Vincent D'Onofrio posted something on social media the other day talking about how, you know, when the two-year ban is up from Netflix, how everybody will be ready to come back and do Daredevil on, you know,
really?
Disney Plus or whatever.
I didn't see that.
But how can you say that? Like, you can't expect... Like, if I'm Charlie Cox and somebody comes along and offers me another role between now and then, am I going to turn it down because, oh, I may have Daredevil in the future?
Yeah, but I feel like there was almost 2 years between season 2 and 3 of Daredevil.
There might have been, you know? but they were still under... Like, they
under
knew
contract.
They were still working on that show, and they were under contract. So even though there was time between seasons, they were working on it. They were probably doing things.
Hey, fingers
Whereas
crossed
now,
they already know now, and they're just not
well,
saying
maybe,
anything, you know? Like,
maybe so, but I think it's, you know, if you're Vincent D'Onofrio, you probably have enough money that you can afford to sit around for 2 years. Charlie Cox, you know, I mean, he's not one of the highest paid actors in Hollywood.
No.
He's only really ever done Daredevil. So I don't think he has enough that he could, well, I mean, he's got more money than you and I, I'm sure, but he probably just can't afford
to
sit around for two years waiting for Daredevil
right.
to come back. If somebody says, hey, here's a new show, he's going to take it.
Right.
You know, so, and same thing with like these Swamp Things guys. Like if somebody offers them another role, they're going to take it.
Right.
You know, they're not going to sit around and wait. So I think you can't expect people just to be in limbo forever. But like you said, we don't know. You know, we don't know anything.
No.
So there could be lots of stuff happening behind the scenes. But like I said, with regard to this, the actors probably have a pretty good idea if they're coming back. And if they're saying they're not and thanking the fans, then the writing's probably
yeah.
on the wall for
but,
that.
I mean, I'll enjoy the show. I've enjoyed the show so far.
Oh,
so
yeah. And I'll watch it till it's done.
It is what it is, and then we move on.
Yeah.
And like we are always saying, we're not hurting for content.
Oh, no. And I already can't watch everything I want to watch now.
Exactly.
So if it's one less thing, I'm not going to be hurting, like, you know,
yeah.
for it. So, but it's just, I don't know. It's got a very high production quality. I think they've done, and I think that was one of the things, I think that was really, at least from the rumors that I've read, the death knell for Swamp Thing was that it was so damn expensive
yeah.
because of the special effects and how much they were spending on it. I think they just kind of priced themselves out of a season two.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of sweet boat explosions so far. I mean,
yeah. Hey.
So,
but you know, the suit, like in this last episode, we got Rot or Mr. Rot,
yeah.
or whatever that character's name is. I mean, the effects have been really solid.
Yeah.
You know,
no, like,
I mean, definitely like, you know, feature film quality effects.
Yeah.
So,
I know, I think
it's definitely expensive.
We said after the first episode, we were like, just one more hour, and this is a feature film. I mean,
right.
it was that quality. And, you know, so to that point, it's, yeah, it probably is pretty expensive to do, if what is this, 6 episodes?
It's 10.
Is it 10?
Okay. Yeah, we are going
to
get 10.
They cut
it was supposed
10.
To be 13.
Right,
yeah.
right. But yeah, so they, 10 episodes, that's 5 feature movies. So
right.
that's, you know, I don't know if they're all going to be as budget packed as maybe episode 1 was. Episode
I would
1
imagine,
I thought was good, but.
Yeah, I would imagine not. But anytime you see, you know, Swamp Thing himself, I mean, there's a lot of money there, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
So, all right. You got anything else news-wise?
Well, we have
the big news that dropped today.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know you're going to talk about that. The only thing I was just reading, I was reading an article earlier today, and it was only noteworthy to me because I didn't know this was happening. On Amazon, they talked about some casting for the Wheel of Time series that they're working on.
Okay.
And I had no idea that they were working on this. Wheel of Time was one of my favorite book series that I ever read. I loved that series of books and always kind of thought to myself that it would be a great
not even
TV
familiar
show.
With it.
Yeah, it would never be a movie because you're talking about, I think it finished off at 13 novels that
really?
were plus 1,000 pages each. I mean, there's like material
wow.
there for years that you could never put into a 2-hour movie or even like a trilogy of movies. But
right.
you could do a long form TV show and get, you know, 13 seasons out of it. So they cast Rosamund Pike, who was in Gone Girl with Ben Affleck.
Yep.
And she's going to play one of the main characters in that. So, like I said, I only thought it was relevant because I had no idea they were doing it. But obviously, if they're casting, they're pretty far along in the process.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really looking forward to it.
So what's that story about?
May not be your thing. Like I said, it's high fantasy. You know,
it's
magic, it's dragons, it's swords and sorcery. You know, Game of Thrones.
I was just
going to
say
Rings.
The next Game
like,
of Thrones.
I have a feeling that Amazon is hoping that this is going to be their Game of Thrones because the world is equally as rich.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Game of Thrones so far is only 5 books, but they're also 800-900 pages each. They're pretty thick. So this has got twice as much you know, density to it.
Right.
You could go on for a long time.
So they could actually do 8 seasons and not go off the rails.
They could. Oh, yeah.
A lot of people.
Right. And this is completely, it's done. Like, this series has been in the can. The last book came out probably 7 or 8 years ago. So there's no waiting for anything to be written.
Right.
Now, in, you know, anytime you have 13,000 pages, there's a lot of filler in there that I'm sure they could trim out.
Oh, yeah.
To make it relevant. But I don't know. I loved that series. I thought it was great. So I'm, like, now eagerly anticipating that coming out. So,
yeah.
And I think on top of that, you know, Amazon also has their Lord of the Rings series that they're working on. So,
yep.
They're definitely looking for their Game of Thrones. And I think either one of these two, they're hoping one of them is going to hit and be.
Yeah.
They sunk a ton of money into Lord of the Rings, probably way more than they did into Wheel of Time. But I know they had to pay like $250 million just to get the rights to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The money they paid for rights is crazy, but I'm sure they'll spend the right amount of money to make Wheel of Time. And
They will. I'm sure that they'll both be high quality. And I don't know. Like I said, I only brought it up because I read it today and I was super excited just to know it was happening. So
yeah. I've never even heard of that.
Yeah,
never.
Like I said,
it's not in my wheelhouse. Yeah. See what I did?
It
there?
Is not. Yep, it is not. Yep, the Wheel of Time is not in your wheelhouse.
So yeah, the big news today was Avengers Endgame is being re-released.
The hell you say?
Yeah, it's like I'm like, okay, I'm there.
Yeah. Well, I guess we had to make it even longer.
Well, I retweeted on CNBC, the report said the movie isn't going to change. So you're basically going, if you go and or when I go, I'm going to see the movie again, and then there's additional footage after, like, the credits and stuff.
Oh, okay. So there's no new scene added into the into the movie.
Right. They're just adding some footage. Let me see if I can pull up the quote here.
So I can pay $8 and wait for the start time and then show up 2.5 hours
later. Exactly.
Go in and sit down and I
pick
can
your
see,
seat
I can
and
see
walk
it.
In.
Yep.
How many people will be doing that?
I don't know nobody.
Okay,
who doesn't want
to
see it
again?
I'll
go to the 4 o'clock show, show up at 6:30.
Right.
And let's see. It, what I thought was funny is they're doing this to beat Avatar, which is another Disney property.
I don't know that they're doing it to beat Avatar. I mean, I know that's what a lot of people are saying.
That's pretty much what they said here in the quotes.
Well, that's... but
to push it
I don't
over
know,
the top.
Did Kevin Feige say that? I don't think so.
Putting
I mean,
some
Avatar...
of the-
Avatar came back out more than once, too, so...
So, listen, this was in here. It says, putting some of that footage into a re-release will draw thousands back to theaters and likely push Avengers Endgame above and beyond the record $2.78 billion Avatar has earned since its release in 2009. Endgame has earned around $2.74 billion globally.
Right.
So, that's not in quotes... Feige said...
But, I mean, I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, that I would be surprised if this didn't come back in theaters right around the same time that Far From Home came out.
Right. Well,
so we kind of called it. Like, we're, you know, we have a knack for calling things ahead of time.
Yeah,
and,
look at us.
You know, that's what we said, and this is the time. Like, Far From Home is next week, so...
It's the following. Far From Home is the week after that.
Yeah.
Next week, this is coming out on the 28th, which is, like... As I think they
like
said,
Friday,
there's nothing else coming out. Nothing big is being released next week,
right?
So,
but I think Far From Home breaks like on Monday or something. It's
is it on
early
the
in the
4th
week.
Of July
yeah.
week?
Yeah,
is that when it
but
comes
it's
out?
Monday of the week because I was looking at buying tickets that Monday night. There's midnight shows, at least in my theaters.
Okay,
so I think that Tuesday. So basically, this is going to hit the theaters on Friday, and then on Tuesday, Far From Home is coming out.
Yeah.
So
it says, all right, here's the quote that I was talking about. And this was according to reports. Feige saying this to Screen Rant. Not an extended cut, but there will be a version going into theaters with a bit of marketing push with a few new things at the end of the movie. If you stay and watch the movie, after the credits, there'll be a deleted scene, a little tribute, and a few surprises.
Yeah.
So, technically, it's basically the same movie with some stuff added at the end.
Yeah.
So, that...
So, we're all gonna... I mean, we're all gonna pay our $9 to go see it again, so...
Why not?
Yeah.
I just... Yeah, I mean, I'll do it, see it again, just to... If nothing, to give me my
now, is vote. It only coming back for the weekend, though? I guess that was my question, is how long is it coming back for?
I think it's more of a... I don't think it's left yet. I think it's just there.
That's
and this
true,
is
too,
because
you can
push.
Still find it.
Yeah,
yeah
this
you,
is
you
just to give it that
it
push to get people to go. And it's like we've said before, movies are the few things that you actually get to vote multiple times.
Right.
And that's why I'd like to go. I'm like, hey, that's my vote. I want this above Avatar. So that's my vote. And I liked Avatar. I did two versions of it. But yeah, I'd definitely pay to see this again. That it?
I think so.
All right. One last thing before we get into our comics. We'd like to spotlight another listener. Fairly new listener, too. Iowa Joe. He's like tearing up the Twitterverse for us. The last few weeks, you and I have had kind of a rough week. We haven't been crazy on Twitter with what's going on last week and stuff. And he's kind of taken over. It's every time I pick up my phone, I'm seeing, I get the little red bubble. I'm like 20
right.
alerts, all these notifications, and I'm like, it's great. The conversations that people are having, and we're getting involved in, and people are including us in is. It's, I was talking with Dr. Joe, because, we have multiple Joes now.
Yeah, yep.
Talking with Dr. Joe, and it's, Iowa Joe is bringing more people to the table. We're, hopefully getting more listeners out of it. So, Iowa Joe, already have your address, because you won the book last week. You beat Dr. Joe to the punch on that one. And so I will be sending you all I need from you is DM me your shirt size. That's all I really need. So Iowa Joe this week, t-shirt listener of the week. He's doing a great job. Keep it up. Everybody keep it up. It's awesome. We really appreciate it.
All right.
All right. So let's get into some comics. It's been a while. So
it has.
What am I spending my money on this week?
All right, so as far as the speculator roundup goes this week, we really don't have any books this week that are really seeing any speculator movement.
All right, that's a great podcast. Next,
yeah, I mean there were some good releases that we will talk about, but as far as variant, like there's nothing that's really lighting up any of the secondary market or selling above cover price. So I just kind of left it at that.
I got one for you. I heard about this today. Do you know about this one? Oh, my phone's falling.
I know that there's, starting last week, which we didn't talk about because we didn't have a show. So last week there was...
So let me tell people what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, I will. So last week there were, with Venom and Symbiote Spider-Man were both released. And... there's a 50-50 ratio of secret variants that came out on both of those books where you can see it's either blood or it's part of the Carnage symbiote suit.
Yeah.
And it's kind of leaking out of the letters on the top of the book. And so this week it happened on Deadpool and...
Deadpool 14.
There's one other book that now escapes me.
Yeah.
But pretty much for the next several weeks... there's going to be books that have these secret variants, which are not secret anymore, but they're going to have these variants leading up to the Absolute Carnage event that's coming up. So last week before Wednesday, when people started seeing this, stores started seeing it when they were processing their books, they were going up on eBay and like the Venom was selling for $12, $15, $20. But that evened out very quickly once people realized that these were a 50-50 split, and they're really not that rare or hard to come by.
Okay.
Like, out of the extra copies of Venom I had last week, four of them were these secret variants, and I actually held him back off the floor because, you know, I was going to play the game and I was going to put some up on eBay and try to make a couple extra dollars. But before Wednesday at lunchtime, I had them all back on my shelf and sold them at cover price because they just weren't that rare or in demand. So if you see them out on the shelves, you know, they may be worth picking up for sure, but don't expect them to, I don't think, really have a super high resale value. But they're just cool. There's nothing different inside the books at all,
right,
that I'm aware of.
No, it's just it's just a variant cover.
Now, because Marvel will do these secret variants at times, the last one was also a Venom book, where the ratio isn't basically 50-50. You know, like maybe 1 in 10 or something. And those have gone up in price and kind of held price. But these are pretty evenly split. So most stores are going to get quite a few of each of them.
All right.
And for some reason, like I said, I can't remember what the second book was this week. But like I said, every week for the next few weeks, there'll be a couple of them. So you won't really know in advance which ones are going to be until they show up. But, for instance, this week, I didn't even really look for them. I didn't separate them out. I just put them all in boxes. Like, I just let them randomly go wherever they went.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think they were really going to be, like I said, they're not going to hold any real value.
Yeah, I just grabbed the Deadpool one because I thought it was cool. Well, Slade showed it to me. I was like, all right. I'll buy that too. Right. He sees me coming a mile away.
Yeah, he chases you out into the parking lot.
In the pouring rain, yep.
And calls you back into the store to buy stuff. Yeah, so
just says, buy this. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, come in and buy this. I still haven't tried that. I need to get my game going.
Yeah, exactly.
Because,
All right.
So,
what do we got for back issue?
So we're going to go into back issue bonuses. There's actually a couple of those. First one is Rat Queens, issue number 16. This is the final issue of Volume 1. So this was back in 2013. It was a couple years ago. But I had no idea this was a $20 book. And I really think it's just because of it was a low print run. But it made me, like, I was digging through my back issues today looking to see if I had any copies of this. It's a really cool series. I like it a lot. But had no idea that this, nothing else in the series is worth anywhere near $20. So
yeah,
it was interesting to me to see that was, there was even, you know, there have been recent sales up to almost $30 on it. So, that's one you may really be able to find in back issue bins still for cover price. So I'd go
take
a look at that. The next one is also from Image Comics. This is Oblivion Song issue number 1. So last week, which we would have talked about this last week, Robert Kirkman announced a movie deal for Oblivion Song. So of course we know what happens when movie deals are announced for Oblivion or for any comic book. Now with Oblivion Song, there's a million copies. There's lots and lots and lots of copies out there. So the main cover isn't really going for too much over cover price. But there was a pink signature variant that came out. I don't remember what the ratio on what. It was also kind of one of these secret variants. And that's going for about $25. So still not crazy money. But, you know, Robert Kirkman created The Walking Dead, and we know what happened with The Walking Dead. Oblivion Song was it's a pretty good premise for a book, and it will make an interesting movie. So it could hit, and you could start to see the value go up on these. So even for cover price, it may not be a bad thing to go out and grab a couple of copies of even the regular cover on this. But what you're really looking for is the pink signature, which is down, you know, where the artist signs the book on the cover. It's just in pink instead of black. So other than that, you don't really notice anything. From Scout Comics, we have Hench Girl, issue number 1. This is also a pretty recent book, but again, this was just optioned for a television show, so it is now selling for $30 to $35. Pretty much the main cover is the only one that's in demand. There's some variants, but they don't seem to be going for the same prices. Just to sidetrack a little bit, I mean, we've talked about it multiple times. Like, studios are looking for any kind of comic book property.
Yeah.
to option for TVs or movies at this point. So, like, nothing is off the table anymore.
That's
like,
what,
every comic that hits the stands now, you could almost buy and say it's a speculator book.
Yeah, any number one.
Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, really, well, I don't know about anything.
You know, we talked about Dark Horse. A few weeks ago, we talked about all the Dark Horse. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Scout Comics, so Scout Comics doesn't have an exclusive deal with anybody, but this, you know, any property, like, at this point, like I just said, could be a
well, everybody's looking for, yeah,
book.
They're buying it up just in case, yep. So that nobody else can do it.
Maybe it doesn't get made. They just have the option for it now.
Yep.
We might never even see it, but in any case, this was also, you know, Scout Comics this was low print run to begin with. There weren't a million of these out there, so they're, like I said, they're probably a little bit harder to find, and that's why they're going for a little bit more. There's a book called DC Superstars number 11 that features Zatanna. This book is climbing up the charts for some reason. It's going for about $50 right now for a mid-grade copy. I don't know why. Really don't know why this book is climbing. It's definitely not a first appearance of Zatanna or anything like that, so maybe it has a sexy girl cover. I don't know. I didn't look it up. But
yeah.
But anyways, for whatever reason, it seems to be climbing. So if you can find those, $50 is about the going rate. From Marvel Comics Presents, issue number 72, this is a Weapon X story. Again, not a first appearance of Weapon X, so I don't know what makes this one specifically important. But it seems to be trending up. It's selling for about $15 now. And, you know, Marvel's teasing some Weapon X stuff. But, like I said, this isn't a Weapon X first appearance. So I don't know what makes this book special. But it's going up.
Hey, we're just reporting the news. We don't know
why. That's
right,
just report. Right. I don't write it. I just report it.
Yeah.
Batman and Robin Adventures Annual Number 1. So last week, Tom King tweeted out an image of Phantasm, which DC pretty much denied right away that Phantasm was going to appear. So we don't know if Phantasm is going to make her first official DC Universe appearance or not. But just that speculation alone has driven this book crazy. Sales right now are about $65, but there were some sold listings on eBay with, like, buy it now for $100. There were best offer accepted, so it sold for somewhere under $100. We don't know exactly. But, you know, this book is really starting to rise in price. And it was just really a picture of Phantasm on the cover. So, so, like I said, we'll see what happens with Tom King's new series and if Phantasm actually becomes a part of that or not. Hungry Ghost, issue number 1. This was written by Anthony Bourdain right before he passed. And this has been optioned for an animated TV show now. So the book has jumped up to about $20. Also a pretty low print run. There weren't a lot of copies of this and not a lot of people looking for it. So depending on what happens with the show, it could go up higher. Sensational She-Hulk number 40. This book is pushing $100 now. I did Google the cover on this one just to see. So this is also another go to your basement.
Oh, jeez.
With a box of tissues cover.
Oh,
and that's why it is now a $100 comic book. I don't know. Like, I don't know where what the limit is going to be on these books now that all of a sudden are going crazy because they have... Like, haven't comic books always depicted female characters in sexy poses? Like,
well,
it's been a
it's
thing
not
since comic
always,
books.
But it's not new. It's been happening.
I mean,
yeah, not every cover is that way, but I
not
mean.
Not every cover, but I'm just saying, like,
Zetoscope.
Women have been. Yeah, women have been, like, portrayed in sexy costumes or poses since the beginning of comic books.
So have
I don't
men.
Know why all of a sudden. Yeah, but nobody's going crazy and paying $100 for a book because Superman has his shirt off on a cover.
Right.
You know, it's...
Well, it is,
you know,
a primarily
guy,
male
Primarily
audience.
Males buy comics.
Right.
And Not to say, all you female listeners, don't get offended. I'm not excluding you. But, you know, by and large, the comic books are bought by young men. And all of a sudden, these kind of titillating comic book covers are going crazy. And it doesn't matter what the character, it really doesn't matter.
Right.
It's, you know, we've seen She-Hulk to Betty and Veronica. It doesn't even matter who the character is.
Right. I know what you're saying. Like, why all of a sudden? Because it's not new. Yeah. It's like these books have been out forever, and now all of a sudden.
Right, Sensational She-Hulk. This book came out in the 80s.
Right. But, you know, but this that's is what old. I mean. It's like, it's got to be more than that or something. I don't know.
But
I mean, I had that conversation on Twitter about Zenoscope.
Right, but and Zenoscope makes their living on sexy girl covers. So does, like, Red Sonja and. But Red Sonja is a character in general that's just designed to be titillating, and yet not – although there's some – we didn't have a show last week, so we didn't talk about this, but there's some Queen Sonja covers that have really started going crazy, too, over the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Lucio Perillo is a variant cover artist that did – we've talked about him before on some other books, but he did a series of covers for Queen Sonja. These were probably like 2013 or so. Those books, again, they're all hitting like $100 now. Just because of the cover art, just because she's drawn in, because you can see her butt or whatever
on the
cover.
Yeah, it's a provocative cover.
Provocative covers. But it's like, what's the, I guess I don't know, there's going to have to be a breaking point on this sooner or later. Like, you can't have every single book that has a female on the cover become a $100 comic
book. Well, all
it takes
is one person to be like, I really like that. They pay a lot, and now everybody, the value goes up, and it creates a spike. And
I'm not saying that some of these aren't great covers. Like, those Queen Sonja covers, like, I like Lucio Perillo's art. I've highlighted some of his recent variant covers. And they're gorgeous covers.
Yeah.
But, like, they're not worth $100 to me just because of the cover.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know. This is a maybe it's not new, but it seems like it's new to me because I've been open for 4 years now, and this is really the first time I've seen this become a trend where these basically provocative covers, like, it's a new subset of collector now that's just going after these covers. And who knows what the next book is going to be. Like, if I was you, I'd be looking through back issue bins just trying to find books with sexy covers.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm just, what about the possibility?
But I'm just wondering when the bottom's going to fall out on this, you know, and.
Well, what about the possibility that maybe people are speculating that with backlash, these covers will go away and people are collecting them? You know what I mean? Like, the way things are right now, like, people are starting to get away from that stuff and they're starting to, like, shun it.
Right.
And maybe people are afraid, like, oh, I better get my copies now because they're, you know, oh, these books are going to be spotlighted to be.
Well, yeah,
taken
but we're
away.
Never going to, like, we're never going to have a footloose a book burning. You know, like, these past books are not going to cease to exist. There may be less and less newer books highlighting that. But yet still, like, even in 2 weeks ago, we had the Street Fighter swimsuit special hit the stands. So they're still making these books. It's not like
still a market.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like
I said,
it's just
spitballing.
It's a little bewildering to me. That's all. Like, who am I to say? Like, my job is to sell comics. So if somebody wants to pay $80 for a comic, I'll sell it for $80. I'm not against it. I just don't understand where this is coming from and why all of a sudden these books are doing this. But anyways, to move on to the last book, we have Betty and Veronica issue number 261. This is the first appearance of Vampironica. This is a $250 comic book, which again just blew my mind because, like, Vampironica has a new series that nobody's buying, at least not in my store. I can't give them away. So I didn't realize that this character was so popular that her first appearance was worth $250. Somebody's buying it, obviously, but like I said, I can't sell them. I don't even order them anymore because nobody buys them. So I don't know quite what's going on with that. And it's not an old book either. This is fairly, I mean, it's a couple years old, but I mean, it's not that old to be worth that kind of money. So, but anyway, that's it for back issue bonus.
That's quite a list.
Yeah, there was a lot. Right. I made up for not having the speculator books.
Yeah, there you go.
And went off on a tangent about sexy girl covers. So
you have that tendency. All right. So what do we have for?
I like my soapbox.
Yeah. So what do we have for final order cutoff this week?
All right. So we've got a couple of variant covers from DC. DC is doing their Year of the Villain month covers, so pretty much all their variant covers are themed, and they're done on a heavy cardstock, which does come with a dollar price increase on these. So all of their variant covers are a buck more than the regular covers. But the two that stood out to me for this week are Justice League number 28. This is the Dodson, Rachel and Terry Dodson variant cover. And then
Dodson. We got Dodson.
Dodson.
Here.
Yeah. See, nobody cares. And then see if anybody picked that. Ought to be your question for whatever giveaway you're going to do. And then Nightwing 62, the Greg Capullo variant cover. Both of these were pretty solid covers. And a couple of new series from DC. We have Collapser. Issue number one. This is going to be a 6-issue miniseries. This is a Young Animals title. So along with Doom Patrol and Eternity Girl, this is Gerard Way's imprint that he's doing for DC. So I don't know much else about it, but there's two covers for that. Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen. This is issue number one. It's going to be a 12-issue miniseries. There's also two covers for that. And then Wonder Woman Come Back to Me, issue number one of, this is going to be 6 issues. So these are, if you're not familiar, Walmart has been doing some 100-page giant DC comics for the past, I don't know, 6 months or so. And they have featured a lot of new content that were not available in comic book stores. You could only get them at Walmart. These stories are all being collected now into these miniseries that DC is doing. So there's going to be Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, and Teen Titans all have these miniseries that are collecting all the Walmart books. And that's it from DC.
Cool.
So moving down to IDW, we have a new series, Ragnarok, Breaking of Helheim. This is issue 1 of 6. This is Walter Simonson. He's done several Ragnarok series for IDW in the past. So this is just the next installment of his miniseries. I've never actually read any of them, but I've heard pretty good things about them. So I may try to check this one out. And hopefully, you know, you don't have to have too much background reading done for them. And that's it for IDW. So
all right.
Moving on to Marvel. Marvel is doing also a series of variant covers, and they're all Carnage variant covers. So Captain Marvel number 8 has an In-Hyuk Lee Carnage cover that's really awesome. Like, that's my favorite cover of the week by far.
So this is more than what we were talking about earlier?
Yes. Now, these are actually, they're called Carnage-ized.
Yeah.
And these are actually, like, this is Captain Marvel, basically looks like she's got the Carnage symbiote.
Okay.
Yeah, so these are more than just what we were talking about. And then there's Daredevil number 8 has a Carnage-ized cover also. Both of those looked really cool. There's a couple of others, but they didn't have images up, so, you know, I wasn't able to see them. And then new series from Marvel, we have Loki, issue number 1, and there's multiple covers available for that. I didn't see where there was a number of issues attached, so I think this is an ongoing series. I don't think it's a miniseries, but I could be wrong, so don't quote me on that. And that's it for Marvel. So the last one for FOC is from Dynamite Comics. Vampirilla has a new series launching. Again, like, this is not anything new, but this is an anniversary year for Vampirilla, so they're starting with a new number 1. there's more covers for this than I have fingers or toes to count on. I mean, there was like almost a whole page of variant covers for this.
He's not joking, people. That's how he counts.
And they right, and they are really pushing this. Like they've, like I said, there's a ton of variant covers, but there's a standee for the stores that are going to have pockets to display these books on, and it's going to be like a freestanding floor display that's basically a big Vampirella cardboard cutout that's going to have all the books attached. Stores have been kind of urged to order fairly heavy on this, and there's full returnability for everything from Dynamite. So I know I'm going pretty heavy on these. I did read an advanced PDF of this, and I actually thought it was pretty good. So I'm
cool.
Like I said, I'm going to go heavy on it and order all the covers.
Lucky duck.
Yeah, but if you want to go in and see what they have available, most of the images are up, so you can go into your store and check it out. And that's it for final order cutoff.
All right. That brings us to our recommended reading this week, and we have quite a few here. So why don't you go first, because I'm really looking forward to this one.
Okay, so the first book I read this week was Usagi Yojimbo, issue number 1. Excuse me. This is from IDW Publishing. This is written and drawn by Dan Sakai. So, Usagi Yojimbo is not a new character. He's been going for about 35 years. He's created and owned by Dan Sakai. Like, every single piece that's ever been done, as far as I know, has been done by him. So, this is definitely his labor of love. And this is a brand new series, though. So, it's a new storyline. It's not reprints of anything that he's done in the past. Most of what he had done has been in black and white, and this is obviously in full color from IDW. So I've never read any of Usagi Yojimbo, only because, again, it's so daunting. There's so many years of material there.
Yeah.
That, you know, where do you jump in if you've never read this? So I can say that you can jump in with this and feel pretty comfortable. This is not a story that shies away from the history. Like, there are definitely references in here to things that have happened in the past, but you do not need to have read them to just jump right into the story and follow what's going on. Like I said, having known nothing about this character or the stories, I read this and I really, really enjoyed it. I liked it. Like I said, I liked it quite a bit. There's a lot of, you know, obviously this is, you know, he's a samurai, he's a rabbit, so this is a world where, you know, we have anthropomorphized, yeah. I can't even say the word.
We give life to animals.
Yes, but so we have animals, thoughts. You know, there's rabbits, there's foxes, there's all kinds of animals running around. But this is set in feudal Japan. There's samurai, there's you know, all that stuff going on. And, again, I don't want to give away any of the story, really. I just, like I said, I really, really liked it. I think just the important thing to know is that if you don't know this character, you don't have to feel like you can't jump in and read it. Yeah, that's it. I recommend it. Go out and buy it.
Cool. All right. My first one this week is from last week, Silver Surfer Black.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to read it?
I read an advanced preview about a month ago.
Oh, okay. It comes out of, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 1. I guess it's it comes right from that. I didn't read that, and I didn't find that out until after I read it, and I really liked the story. The cover that I have the variant cover for, it's like the Comic Club cover.
Comics Pro, yeah.
Yeah. So I love that cover. And then as some people were talking about on Twitter, the artwork in this is like crazy. It feels
very
like
60s.
Yeah, I was going to say 60s, 70s-ish.
Psychedelic.
Like, yeah, psychedelic. Yeah. And I kind of liked it. Because it was a different feel. Like, at the beginning, I thought they were just, you know, it was just getting you into it, and it, you know, maybe some background stuff. But then as it went on, it, in a few pages in particular, it really jumped out, like full page panels. And like on the next page was an ad. So like you saw, it was like, that's a weird way to explain it, but it's like you have the artwork. It's a full page piece of art. And then on the other page was an ad for another comic that's coming out in like a week or so. But right. The art, it's such a contrast. And I thought it was just kind of cool to see that. And I did that a few times in the book. But yeah, it's so bubbly. It's like almost like it was done in a lava lamp or something.
Yeah. Well, that's all I could say. It's very 60s, like acid trip, psychedelic. That's
yeah, I've
all
never
I could
been
think
on
about
an acid trip,
it.
But okay, I'll take your word
for
it.
Well, I have, but that's that's neither here nor there.
Right. Yeah, it was. But the aside from that, it's like the story I thought was really good.
It was good. So just a little bit of background, I guess, because you were saying you didn't read Guardians. You know, Donny Cates has been writing Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's writing this. And he's kind of weaving a story that's kind of interconnected between the two. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think you should have felt super lost if you haven't read Guardians.
I wasn't at all.
Yeah, but I mean, there's definitely some connections that are happening. And I think things that are coming up in the future are going to tie these books together pretty, like they're going to be pretty interconnected. So,
well, we'll have to go along and I'll, cause I'm going to keep reading this and then we'll see. Cause a lot of times it's stuff that like you may be able to enjoy the run, but you just won't know. You won't know what you're missing.
Right.
You know, and that's what I'm kind of hoping for, but maybe we'll, you know, we can compare notes later. Are you reading the Guardians?
I read Guardians, yes.
Okay, so we can compare notes as we go.
Yeah.
That's always a fun thing to do. All right, you want to... why don't you do your next one?
All right, so the second book I read was from Valiant Comics, and this was Psylords, issue number one. This was written by Fred Van Lente, with art by... Okay, Renato Guidas. I don't know. I'm sure I said that wrong. So this is a new series from Valiant. As far as I know, I'm not a Valiant Comics reader. I haven't read very much, but it seems like these are all brand new characters that were created for this book. I don't think they existed prior to this. The first thing I'll say about this book is the art is fantastic. It's got that painted art style, and the art in this book is great. Really, really beautiful to look at. And that might be the best thing about it, if I'm being honest. The story was, it was okay. Like, it's basically, there's four astronauts, and it starts off with each one of them waking up in a cell, and they don't know how they got there. But they have this voice that's speaking to them in their heads, kind of telling them, hey, you need to wake up, you need to escape. You know, it's kind of starting to give them direction, and they don't really know, obviously they don't know where this voice is coming from. Like I said, they don't know how they got there or where they are. But the voice is telling them that they can escape, that they have powers, that they're gods, they can do anything they want. And, of course, at first, these people don't believe that. But as the story goes along, they start to believe what he's saying and start to exhibit these powers and kind of start to break out of their cells and try to figure out where they are. And, you know, trying to find the voice, because the voice needs them to come and help rescue him. And that's kind of where the story ends. Like, they get to where the guy is that's giving them directions, and they go to rescue him, and then something goes down there that I'm not going to say because I don't want to spoil it any further. But I'm not sure that I loved it, to be honest with you, and I'm not sure that I'll continue with it. It didn't really hook me, but like I said, the art alone, I mean, it was so good looking that I might get the next issue just to
just to see if it keeps going.
Just to see it. So I don't necessarily give it a huge thumbs up, but it's worth taking a look at least pick it up and flip through it, see if it's your thing.
You yelled at me for doing that a few weeks ago.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Buy it. We don't like that when people just look through it.
I did say stand there and read the whole thing. I just said flip through it, see if it looks interesting, and then buy it if it does. Like I said, it's kind of an interesting premise, and you know, it could have potential, but it didn't really, like I said, it didn't really, really grab me. So I'm not going to give it, like I said, a huge recommendation. Yeah. But like I said, it may be worth taking a look at, and I'll just kind of leave it at that.
All right. My next one is also from last week, Sonata, number one.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah, and with written by David Hine and Brian Haberlin, mm-hmm. and art by Brian Haberlin as well. I thought the art in this was really good.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. It's the darks, the lines, I want to say the ink, but it's like the black line. It felt like a pen and ink.
Right.
And but the colors were really, obviously really good as well. But it's but the story is it's, what would you say? It's like, you know, you have your good guys and your bad guys, but I don't think that it's one of those stories where it's just the whichever side you're on.
Right.
That's what you'll call they all think they're good guys.
Right.
And they're what are they trying to survive on the planet? And these two groups of people.
Yeah, basically they've had to leave their home planet because either they exhausted their resources,
yeah.
or something kind of happened to force them, you know, out from their homes.
Right.
And they've settled on this planet with another group of people who are also settled on the planet, and they're kind of fighting for resources.
Right.
Is really what it kind of looked like. As well as, you know, the indigenous people that are from the planet. Who are suffering because of these other people fighting for resources. So
what I wanted to say, aside from like the artwork is really good, much like the last book you were talking about, that it's worth picking up for the artwork. But the story actually made me, I was thinking about it like days later after reading this story, in almost on a like an ethical level of, you know, like we talk about this planet, we talk about it all the time. Like we're destroying Earth, and we're destroying this planet. If we destroy this planet, do we have the right to go to another planet?
Right.
And start sucking up the resource? You know what I mean? It'd be like me eating all my food here and just showing up at your house.
Right. We had our chance.
We had our chance. Shouldn't we die off? We blew it. It's like, you know, but I, you know, and I was thinking about it days later, and it was because of this book.
Right.
And I was like, wow. And you know, I don't think we're spoiling anything, because it ends in a different way than you would think.
It came out two weeks ago, so.
Yeah, and it takes you in a different direction at the end of it. But yeah, I just thought it was like, I don't know why it just made, you know, it made me think that. I was just like, you know, maybe we don't have the right to do that, but of course, survival, your instinct, that's what you're going to do.
Exactly. Well, we don't have the ability to do it right now, so
no,
we're going to be out of luck. But
no, but you, I mean, you know, 1,000 years ago, you could have said the same thing when they were trying to take over other parts of our own planet. So
right.
But all right, so enough on that.
I kind of wanted to mention, and I thought about this when I was reading it, and I think, you know, well, I keep wanting to say last week, but it's been 2 weeks ago since we did a show.
Yeah.
I think it was the Journey into Mystery that you were reading, how you were talking about how you got to the end of it and you didn't realize that the book had ended because it just went into like 3 pages of ads afterwards.
Yes.
But maybe it wasn't Journey into Mystery, but whatever it was, I read the same book and I had the exact same experience. Like I got to that page and I was like, okay, and I turned the page and
yeah, and you're like,
there was nothing there, and I turned the page again and there was nothing there, and I was like, okay, I guess that's the end of the book.
Yeah, wasn't that weird?
It was really weird. It was. I think it was Journey into Mystery, but
yeah.
it was definitely something. I just kind of wanted to bring it up because even though we had talked about it, I still had the exact same experience when I read it.
Like, right, and so
I
like,
no,
but
I didn't realize
I had
the book
it.
Ended. Yeah,
yeah, and it's you get to it. Oh, DJ was right.
Yeah,
like, was, just, there's no
I just
like
it was, right. There's no it
to be
say,
continued.
Right, nothing.
Or there's yeah. like, hey, next week or in 2 weeks you'll get this. It was just like literally just ended with ads.
Yep, and it was just like, done.
Yeah, it'd be like if okay. all of a sudden we just shut the podcast off right now. People, dead air. People be like, "What? Where'd they go?"
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to do my last one after I'll do War of the Realms because we'll do the Superman Year One. That's my last one. We'll do that leading into our main topic. So this week on what did we have? This week we had Spider-Man and the League of Realms.
Right.
We had, and that was Spider-Man. They were all wrap-ups. Spider-Man 3, Journey into Mystery 5, and War Scrolls. So I wrote War Scrolls, I think, was really good this week. You had the wrap-up of the Daredevil God Without Fear story. That was really good. That's worth it alone. One of my favorite stories in all of the, you know, War of the Realms. But then there was another story, a Doctor Doom story. And I had tweeted about it today, and I said it was Dark Visions-esque. Because remember the Darth Vader story where the people, where he, I think it was second one, maybe, where the kid saw him as a hero?
Yes.
It's pretty much that story.
Right.
It's pretty much that story in the second story in War Scrolls. And then the last one in that is the She-Hulk story. And that's really good. It's there's some pretty funny laugh out loud stuff towards the end of that story. But it's kind of a heartfelt story where she's like, I guess, you know, she's in love with, or she's not even sure if she loves Thor.
Right.
So they're at the beginning of their relationship and she's got some issues with that. So, and they're in the middle of a battle. So that's what kind of makes it funny.
Right.
And then the next one was, Journey into Mystery. This one was pretty good. It tied up, like I said on Twitter today, it wrapped it all up and, basically it wraps up and brings you right into what is going to be, I think all of these characters are going right into the main battle that's right. going to happen in War of the Realms that's coming up. And then the Spider-Man one was, of course that was, you know, I've been liking that story all along. With all the battles going on in all of this War of the Realms stuff, everybody, you know, there's fun stuff, there's battles going on, there's people dying, lot of tension going on. And then Spider-Man here in this story is pretty much doing things his way, trying not to fight. Since the beginning of the story arc, he's trying to do things, without fighting, which was really interesting. And then if you've been following the story, I think you'll like the end of it. And again, this one goes right into War of the Realms 6. So,
right.
But that one, I mean, Spider-Man is really good in this one. And
yeah.
So.
Yeah. I was going to say one more book from last week, 'cause I know you're going to get into Superman here in a second, but, I think, it was issue 4 of Spider-Man Life Story came out last week.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you got a chance to read that one
yet. I haven't read that
one
yet.
Nope. Okay. Man, that series just keeps getting better and better. I'm not sure if you're caught up to it or not. But that is such a great read. If you haven't picked up Spider-Man Life Story, at this point you're probably going to have to get second or third prints of the first couple of issues.
Yeah.
But it is a phenomenal Spider-Man story. Chip Zdarsky is writing it, and he's also behind the Daredevil run that's going on right now. And if you've listened at all recently, you know what a fan I am of the Daredevil run.
Yeah.
And I liked Life's Story from the beginning, but I didn't think it was quite on par with the Daredevil stuff. But the longer this series goes on, This series is really becoming pretty good too. So he might be one of my new favorite writers, actually. Like, I've really liked these two series quite a bit. So
go out
and pick up Life Story, because it's actually really, really good. So. Cool.
All right, we'll do this last one before we get into our main, and it'll basically roll us right into the main topic.
Yeah,
Superman Year One.
Yep.
Frank Miller, John Romita Jr. What happened with you?
I hated it.
I read this, and I didn't know you were gonna have read it, but
I only read it because you put your tweet out,
and then you read it after,
and
that?
You liked it so much that you wanted to talk about it. So I was like, I had a little bit of time to kill before my wife came home from work this evening. So I was like, well, let me read this real quick so we could talk about it. And yeah, I really disliked it.
And you know what's funny is while I was reading it, I thought you might dislike it.
Yeah.
I see why. I know why you dislike it. Why I like it, I think it's a fresh take. I think it's something new. I don't think it's for you or us. But it doesn't mean I can't enjoy it. It's definitely different. And yes. That's why I said, like, I really liked it. And I know Dr. Joe had said on Twitter he wasn't going to buy it. And then I had said that I really liked it. And I think he went and bought it. And I hope he liked it. But even if he didn't, it's definitely going to be one that I think is a lot of buzz. And, you know, people like you and I, there will be a lot of talk about it.
Yeah, and I don't want to go super negative on it because, to be selfish, I have 25 or so copies left on the shelf that I need to sell. So I don't want to talk people out of buying it. But, yeah, I didn't like it. I really didn't like it at all. I think the art is terrible.
Really? I thought it was simplistic. It opens up. I didn't think it was simplistic at all.
No, the first couple of pages weren't bad, and I was thinking, because I'm not a fan of John Romita Jr.'s art anyways. And after the first two or three pages, I thought, you know, he's actually kind of stepped it up a little bit because these look pretty good. But then once you actually started getting people involved,
it really went cartoonish.
Downhill. There's a page early on in the book where Jonathan and Martha Kent are talking to each other, and it's basically like the whole page, and he's all the way down one side, and she's all the way down the other, and they're kind of looking at each other, so you're getting profile views of both of them. And all I could think of was either they looked like Muppets or they looked like South Park, because their mouths are kind of like open in that triangle shape, like they look like Muppets. And he's just a terrible artist. I really don't think the art is very good at all.
I wouldn't say that.
I mean, he's better than me. Don't get me wrong, but he's still a terrible artist. I really thought the art was bad, and I didn't like the story. First of all, this thing was about 60-something pages. Like, I just kept thinking, when is this damn thing going to be over? Like, I'm done with this already. And it just kept going on and on and on. But
see, I really enjoyed it. I got sucked in with the whole middle story, which is like a bullying story.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the beginning where there was a new perspective of him leaving Krypton.
Yes, definitely that was new.
I thought it, as I'm reading this stuff, I'm thinking, hey, this is pretty cool. This is different. And every time I say that to myself, I'm thinking, a lot of people are going to be mad that this is different. Yeah. And this is, you know what I mean? And
I didn't dislike it because it's different. I just didn't think it was very good. Like, all right, so he's not an infant really when he's leaving Krypton, which is fine. You know,
I think he was, but he wasn't a toddler yet. He was an oversized infant.
He was big, I guess. But I mean, that's the whole thing. But he was self-aware. Like, first of all, I couldn't really tell who was narrating this story, at least in the beginning.
At the beginning, it was him. And because that's what I thought was cool.
But it seemed like it was him, but he kept referring to himself in the third person. So it was kind of like, I don't really know who's telling this story, but he was very self-aware for a baby, you know?
Well, he is Superman.
he...
And that's how I looked at it. There were a couple of things that...
Then can we even talk about him? Like, there's a scene where they don't show it, but they talk about it, where he's flying to Earth, Krypton blows up, and he spits up over himself, and yeah. It says the machines inside the rocket clean up his spit up, so right. Now we have these, like, machines inside the
funny.
Rocket that are, like, cleaning up. I guess they're changing his diapers, too, because
right.
We've never really covered that, but when he gets to Earth, he's got a clean diaper, so.
Right. I got that, too, and I got to tell you, I loved it. I thought it was a riot. I thought it was funny because I'm like...
Yeah.
It's like one of those things where you're like, why did they even put that in? Nobody's ever put that in before. Like, nobody's ever asked the question, like, where did the baby go to the bathroom all this time?
And right, but that made me think about it for the first time in 80
right.
years.
And so...
Because how did it happen before? Like, in the 30s when he flew to Earth, I guess he came with a dirty diaper because...
Apparently.
That's a long trip, and babies can't hold it.
Right,
so.
And nobody ever asked that question, like an alien, and you go into hypersleep. Do you soil yourself?
Right.
Like, what's going on there? So it's like, and just that alone is worth the purchase.
Like, I guess.
It's getting people, like I said, I'm like, I'm sorry, Dr. Joe, if you didn't like it, but people are going to be talking about it. There's other things in there. I don't want to bring it up now. We'll talk about it next week. But there's another one in there that I kind of cringed at.
Yeah. Tell me offline later because I'm sure I probably bumped up against that.
Oh, I'm sure you
too,
were like,
but...
what the? It's basically, let me just put it this way. It basically previewed a new power he has never had before.
Hmm.
If you didn't pick up on it.
Now you're making me, we'll have to talk about it later.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about it later. We'll definitely talk about it next week, I think.
But I really disliked the fact that they turned the Kents into, like, Beverly Hillbillies yokels, you know? Like, they were talking, like, backwards country bumpkins. And just because they're from Kansas doesn't mean they're, you know, stupid.
I didn't get them as stupid.
But the speech patterns that they had, and everybody in the town had, like, everybody in Smallville were straight out of the Beverly Hillbillies, and that really kind of bothered me a lot. I didn't like that at all. I don't know. It was just a lot. I don't know. It just, I didn't like it. I mean, there was a lot about it that I didn't like.
I liked it. And I really liked the story. Like I said, I really liked the way the story, there are some details I wasn't crazy about, or just one that we'll talk about later. But I really liked everything they did. I thought it was different, and different in a way that was fun. It's gonna make people angry that are huge Superman fans and be like, "This isn't my Superman." But that's fine.
The other thing that really kind of bothered me, and I don't need this to enjoy a comic. Don't get me wrong, but this was not very Black Label. Like, I don't know why this couldn't have just been a regular Superman story in the main DC proper.
Right.
Like,
was
there was
the
nothing
thing.
Black Label about this story at all, with the exception of maybe one little racial slur that they put in, and then there was a little innuendo to a rape scene, I guess. But it was so subtle that...
Right.
Like, nothing... I see more... There's worse things in Detective Comics every week. Or
of course.
Any other comic that... I don't see why this was a Black Label story. Like, this could have just been put out as a miniseries by DC and not billed as Black Label. And like I said, I don't need to have sex or drugs or any of that stuff to enjoy a story. But to me, if you're going to call it Black Label, make it mature. Like, it should have been a mature story, and it really... Unless it gets...
Well,
maybe,
my thing,
you know,
was,
we don't know what issue 2 and 3 are going to be like, so maybe we get there later. But this, it was very tame to me, you know, for...
I felt like this was, yes, it was tame, but I feel like this was geared towards your new teen reader. It was a high school level or maybe junior high to teen, you know, a teen, you know, 13, 14-year-old and up, the new reader of Superman. To get people in to read Superman. That's what I felt like this was geared towards. And if you come into this fresh, I think this is a great story. if you've never read Superman before, if you're a kid that's, you know, and you're just starting out, I think this is a great story because I love that the high school aspect of it. You have a lot of stuff in there that doesn't necessarily go on nowadays. And I've had that conversation with my kids. It's stuff that's from our past. Right. And it's old-fashioned, like, bullying. Not like what we have now with social media and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, right. This was like, you know, getting egged and, you know.
Yeah, it
was,
literally, like, when we were kids, the kind right. of bullying you get, like, physical bullying.
Right.
And how a kid like, you know, Clark Kent would have to deal with that. And it's, I thought it was that part of the story I thought was really, really well done. I thought it was a great story for kids to read. Go ahead.
I'll say the other thing that bugged me about it too, and they touched on this even in 1939 when Superman first came out. They made a point to touch on this because, like, why do these people just get to keep this kid that shows that they find in a field?
Yeah, I know, huh?
Like, nobody is going and asking any questions. Even in 1939, there was a scene in Action Comics number 1 where they went to an adoption agency to try to make things legal, you know, with this
right.
kid. But here we are in, you know, I don't know what year this was taking place in. It definitely wasn't 2019, but you get the feeling that it was somewhere in the 80s. At least that's kind of how it felt to me.
Right.
In 1980, you can't just find a kid in the road and keep it, and nobody asks any questions about where it came from. So
I think you kind of could.
Maybe in Smallville, but...
Well, didn't you ever hear about the when 8 million kids went missing or something like that? It was the biggest crisis in the history of the country for children? You've never heard this story?
No.
So it was like in the late 80s. Like 88, 89 or something like that. We were too young to know anything about this stuff. But all of a sudden,
we were graduating high school, so
no,
we weren't
no, no,
that
I know.
Young.
Yeah, but no, listen, when you hear the story, you'll be like, oh yeah, that was over our heads at the time. But apparently in the late 80s, the government decided that you had to actually put the social security number of your children on your tax forms if you wanted to claim your children. So all of a sudden, from one year to the next, 8 million kids went missing because people were claiming multiple kids that
they were just
never
making.
Owned.
Right, they were making kids up.
Right, they were claiming like I got 6 kids and they had 2, and all of a sudden you couldn't do that anymore. So things were a lot more lax back then.
Right, but it also
like,
wasn't
where
a case
kids
of
come from.
But there was no physical kids just showing up in school one day.
No, but
and nobody knew where they came from.
No, but it was kids were moved around a lot easier back then, I'm sure.
Because they even touched
on it. There
were
no computers to track it. You're like,
they even touched
on
it in this
book.
Oh,
it's my sister's.
They made a comment in this book that, hey, they couldn't hide this kid forever, so it looks like they took him to Walmart. That was the first place they brought him out in public.
Yeah, and they wanted to get him out in public and let people see him so that they knew that, oh, he's with them and get it over with. Something
right.
like that.
But it's like nobody questioned where the hell he came from. He just showed up there.
Yeah. So, all right, let's go right from that. Let's jump right into this week's main topic.
My name is General Zod. I have journeyed across an ocean of stars to reach you. Your world has sheltered one of my citizens. He will look like you, but he is not one of you. To those of you who know of his location, the fate of your planet rests in your hands. To Kal-El, I say this.
Surrender within 24 hours, or watch this world suffer the consequences.
So, in this, we'll go right back into that. They do the same thing in the movie. It's like he shows up and it's the same story.
Right.
That, you know, where did he come from? Nobody cares. And in this movie, it seems, in Man of Steel, it seems a little bit more modern than even Superman Year One.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and I'm just jumping
when did this
ahead
come
for
out
context,
in like, what, 2017? 2016 when this movie came out? I don't remember.
No, 13.
13. Oh, it's been that long already? You get the feeling
this was
that
the first. That's why I put that out.
But you get the feeling that it was taking place in 2013. Like
It wasn't
a period movie at all. I mean, it was so however old he was, you know, go back 20 years and that's kind of when they would have been finding him. So what, like 1993 or so?
Right.
So it was definitely more modern time. Again, because by 1993, you would think you couldn't just show up with a kid and nobody question where it came from.
Yeah, it would have been in the 80s, I think, because he was, by the end of this.
Oh, he was 30 years old.
He was 30
right?
years old. Yeah,
so it would have been in the
80s. Said. It would have been in the 80s.
Okay, so maybe he was one of those tax evasion. Yeah, he was a tax evasion kid, and, you know, nobody questioned it. So.
But let's go back to the beginning of the movie, though. The very opening scene of Krypton and, you know, Russell Crowe. All of that. What did you think of that? What did you think this time, last time? I thought it was one of the better versions of that story.
Well, even then, like, it was a new take on, you know, we really hadn't seen that much of Krypton in any of the movies in the past. You know, if you're a comic book reader, a longtime comic book reader, you know, you've had a lot of history of Krypton and things like that, but we never really got it in the movies. So it didn't bother me at all. I thought they were good scenes. I mean, him flying around on a dragon or whatever the heck it was a little weird, but, I don't know. It didn't bother me at all. I mean, I thought the scenes were good. I liked the interaction with him and Zod, you know, on Krypton before the explosion. So to me, it was just an expansion of what we already knew, but it really, in a lot of ways, it just kind of felt to me like, Russell Crowe said, I'm not going to do this unless I get to have some action and do some things on screen. And they wrote it specifically for him. It's kind of how I felt when I was watching it.
Yeah. But I also think that whole opening scene, when the first time you're seeing it, I was in awe of the scene. Right. You don't know context yet. You have, you know, on first viewing, you don't know context of how this plays into the rest of the movie. But with multiple viewings now, you see that that opening scene and that interaction with Zod sets up the entire, you know, final scene of the movie. And we'll get into that final scene and the controversy around it. But the opening scene actually answers some of those questions for me. And it sets everything up, and the entire the codex, the explanation of what happened to their planet, why it happened, how people are made on their planet.
Right. Well, there was definitely some new ideas.
How people are made.
Right. There was some new ideas there, because I don't think that had ever been. I don't remember that ever happening before. That everybody was predestined and bred for certain jobs and. Certain places in society, and even the fact that there was no natural childbirth happening. I think these were all new ideas for the movie, but none of that bothered me. Like, I thought it was, you know, I thought it was fine, and everything made sense to me from a story perspective. And you're right, it definitely sets up the final, you know, not the final scene, but definitely the final confrontation between him and Zod. Is based on what we find out at the beginning of the movie.
Right. So from there, I kind of felt like after that, it was, what did you think of the, like, Mom, Pa, Kent, and the whole, I thought that was more of the same.
Right. It jumped kind of from there into the very traditional story that we all kind of know. You know, founded by the Kents on a farm, grows up to be, you know,
you do your standard trials and tribulations, right, and how he handles it. Which is funny, going back to Superman Year One, I thought Year One was way more in depth, and that I think that's the idea of Year One.
It was.
None of these movies have ever, even going back to, you know, 78 or Superman Returns,
Well, because in a two-hour movie, you're not going to spend 45 minutes in Kansas. You know, nobody wants to see that. Now, again, these things have all been explored over the years in the comics in depth. And, hell, we got 10 seasons of Smallville. So, like, we know everything there is to know about Clark Kent growing up in Kansas because we've seen it. So, but this was all the same. Like, nothing was really super different here. You know, they're trying, you know, I mean, as parents, you have the Kents who are in charge of raising this, you know, god, basically. Like, they already know from a very young age that he's, you know, have all these crazy powers and abilities. So. Yeah.
Well, when you get your kid out of a spaceship.
Right. But, but I guess the pressure that these parents are under, because, like, we haven't talked about Brightburn, and I haven't actually even seen the movie, but if you know what it's about, it's basically what if Superman was bad. Right.
Right.
So you have to raise this kid because how you raise this kid determines whether he's going to be a god or a monster. And he's got the powers to save or destroy the world. So that's a lot of pressure to be under as parents, you know, because you've got to raise this kid with a moral compass to make sure that he's not going to go out there and slaughter millions of people. So, but, you know, we, like I said, we see this in just very brief flashbacks, really, at the beginning of the movie, which I'll touch on some of that, I guess, as we go on, because I don't think he's got a great moral compass, really, in the beginning of this movie. So,
really?
Yeah.
I thought, because I thought Kevin Costner's portrayal was really good. I thought he was doing the best that he could. And Superman was, I think his, maybe I do agree with you, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I think what this movie was trying to do was, and it said it, Russell Crowe said it at the very beginning, in that, you know, you're going to be half and half.
Right.
He's going to have the best of both worlds. So he's going to be part man. He's going to be human, but he's also going to be a Kryptonian. So, You know what I mean? So, like you said, we could start to, I don't want to say go off the rails here, but some of the controversy with this movie is that people don't think that this is Superman. And
right. Well, and I agree.
I know you do. I know you do. And the funny thing is, and this is one of the things I was laughing about when we were getting ready to do this last week, and I was like, I had to actually scroll back and look at all of our episodes when I announced we're doing this. I'm like, did we do this one already? Because this is one of the ones we never released. You and I have had this conversation.
Have we talked about this already?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Remember we recorded
I know we did
one.
Justice League, but I don't remember recording Man of Steel.
Well, we did a all-encompassing one.
I guess we did we did a DCEU, I guess.
Right. And we talked about this and stuff. Then I had the conversation with Motor at Legends.
Right.
And he was very angry. And he agrees with you, but he was angry. And
I'm not angry.
He hates this movie. I know you're not.
Yeah.
It's like, he is. And people, and some people, and I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying, like, this movie, like, bothers him to the core.
Right.
And you know me, I'm just not like that. I just, you know, I'm like, I see the artwork in almost everything, so.
Well, right, and I know your stance is that there's room for different interpretations of the characters, and I definitely agree with that, but I also feel like fundamentally the character should stay the same, regardless of whether it's the comic books or the movies or what have you. And I think in this movie he doesn't, like, Superman is referred to as the big blue Boy Scout. And he is definitely not a Boy Scout in this movie. You know, he's stealing clothes from people out of their trucks. You know, Superman doesn't do that. He wraps some guy's truck around a telephone pole. First of all.
Actually, no, he wraps telephone poles.
Or wraps the telephone poles around the truck.
They're all stuck through.
First of all, that truck belongs to the company that the guy works for. It doesn't belong to him. So now you're destroying, like, you know, private property.
Not true. If you talk to truck drivers, a lot of truck drivers own their own trucks.
Well, they don't own the trailer though. They're hauling somebody else's stuff.
So maybe, but either way, it's
He's not very Boy Scouty.
Either
and then
way,
we'll
that
get
guy's
to
screwed.
Right, we'll get to the last scene later, but that's definitely not Boy Scouty at all. That's why I say his character is a little bit like he's not the Superman that we are used to. He's not the Boy Scout.
He's flawed.
Which is fine, but that's not the way he's portrayed for 80 years. It's definitely out of character for him. And there's some leaps that are taken in this that, like you said, they resonate okay with some people, and with other people, they're really bothered by it. And for me, it bothers me. I don't hate it. I actually, to sum it up before we even get going, I like this movie. It doesn't bother me to the point where I hate it, but it nags at me. Some of the things that he does, I don't think are in character.
That's funny. I just think it's, I love it. I love the movie. I'll get into my version of Superman later. Pertains to Father's Day and stuff. But I think artwork is open to interpretation. And I think when people, it's not a bad thing for people to cling on to it and to a certain ideal and a certain piece of art and stay with that. But like we said before with that article that you had, it's like, okay, so if you don't like it, you don't have to watch it.
Right.
But with that comes, I think a lot of people say it should never have been made, and I don't agree with that.
I don't agree. Like I said, I don't go that far. I don't agree with that either.
No, I know you don't. But getting back to it, it's like, so Superman being flawed, I think that's the part that's new. Superman hasn't been flawed in the past.
No.
Because like you said, he's the big blue Boy Scout. He's perfection. He wasn't human. He was an alien that, did everything to be perfect. He never lied. He would just be perfect. And I think with that, when you make a movie like this, people get upset. And I was having a conversation with Dr. Joe yesterday when I dropped off some books to him. And we were talking about this. He was looking forward to listening to this. And he said, he said something that was really interesting and it made me think. And I said it back to him. He said, the MCU is having a lot more, for some reason, is having a lot more success with their adaptation of their movies. And he goes, but something like this, like Man of Steel, is creating all this controversy. And I said, is it possible? And with him saying that, it made me think about it. I'm like, is it possible that that's because of Stan Lee? So Stan Lee created all of his characters with flaws so that he created them so that they were more relatable, right? But then when you try to go and make movies about these, there's no going off the rails. You can have Spider-Man push a guy out the window and kill somebody, or he can do things because he is a flawed character. You can have Captain America kill somebody. You can have people doing these things and it's not as big of a jump. Whereas the DC had, they have Superman and they have Batman. Those are the two differences, and both of them supposedly don't kill, but have in the past. But you know what I mean?
Right. Stan Lee comes along in the 60s and he creates all these everyman type characters that people really relate to. And that's been a huge criticism or a huge difference between those companies, since the 60s. So I think in a sense you're right, because the society we live in today, and especially the entertainment that we digest, we want our heroes to kill the bad guy. Like, we want that gritty violence in our entertainment. And
see
so,
John Wick.
Right. So how do you do that with characters like Superman who, aren't built that way and make it interesting? So, I get I definitely understand why they feel like they have to do what they do, but I don't know. I guess as a person that's followed the character my whole life, I want to see my, you know, I want to see Superman the way I see Superman. So it's kind of like, I guess it's kind of like I want to have my cake and eat it too, you know? I don't.
I thought they did a decent job of giving us both, which I know is, if you, it's kind of like once you, he needs to be 100%, and once you go, you'll never get, you know what I mean? So you can't have both. He needs to be 100%, and I understand that. From your perspective, but I thought they did so for instance, the scene when he had the handcuffs on,
right?
And that was your Boy Scout,
right?
You know, he turned himself in, but before he did that, he didn't do it unquestionably. He went to church and,
right,
you know, and it and, you know, we don't have to get into the entire religious connotation
but
there is a lot of religion in this.
Well, I mean, he's been parallel to Jesus since he started, so, I mean, that's nothing new. But, yeah, there's...
Right.
You know, he talks to the priest, and the priest says sometimes you have to take that leap of faith, and that's, you know, why he does what he does. But he also makes a point before the scene is over to snap those handcuffs and let everybody know he's not messing around, you know.
Well, but see, I took it the other way. I thought it was like, you know, he's like, look, he says to Lois, like I, you know, he goes, it wouldn't be much of a surrender if I resisted, right?
Right.
So he's sitting there with them on, and he's like, makes them feel comfortable. But then I think the other part that makes them feel comfortable is when he snaps them off and never does anything to harm them.
Well,
I don't want you to think that you're comfortable because you have me in cuffs. So I think he stood up and he's kind of showing off, but to show them like, look, I could hurt you at any time and I never have. Right. And then they make the comment like, well, you could have bacteria on you. He goes, I've been on this planet for 33 years.
Right.
I haven't, you didn't even know I existed. So how, you know, how much of a harm can I be? And I think that's why he broke it. It was, to me, that's how I read it, because first he's looking through, he's reading their name tags. You've got the entire, like, SWAT team behind the guy, and he's like, yeah, you guys, don't worry about it. You can't do anything like that. You can't hurt me. But he's not going to hurt them. You know, that's how I took it. I didn't think he was trying to be a badass. I thought he was trying to show them that, like, look, I'm not going to hurt you.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I agree with what you said. I don't know. We just kind of lost steam there for a second.
But from there, it's like, but then, you know, from there you get into the whole, now we get into Zod.
Right.
And we get into his whole mission statement, everything that he's here to do. We get, I'd never seen that before. The whole like atmospheric thing, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was different. Like I said, lots of things were different. You know, the whole terraforming Earth to turn it into new Krypton was a different idea.
But that played into Zod.
Well, for sure.
That, you know what I mean? That you have that whole terraforming idea, then that goes into like that Zod solution, which answers to his core,
right?
Which is what he was made to do, was to save, you know, his whole entire purpose of being is to protect Krypton. Right. So Krypton's gone. How do I protect it? I build a new one. Once he got out of the Phantom Zone, that's what he decided. You know, he says whatever. He spent all these years traveling the universe, finding these ships, and he found the ship for terraforming and everything.
Yeah. Well, and they repurposed the Phantom Drive core or something to get power to power the ship or whatever.
Right.
But
all that being, but anyways, I thought it was pretty cool. Like they showed at the beginning when when Superman was a child and him adjusting to. One, obviously he didn't have to adjust to the atmosphere, but he did. We didn't see it. He had to, but we didn't see that.
We didn't see it, but the mother, his mother talked about it later when she said she used to watch him sleep and he had a lot of trouble breathing.
Right.
So you knew
you went through that as a baby, but then the senses. I thought that was really cool. Because to me, when I was a kid, I always wondered, like, if Superman can see through everything, how does he see anything?
Right.
Because if you're seeing through everything, you're just going through. So is it like, how does he must have to focus. And that's, you know, that was one of the questions you'd talk about on the playground. And then for them to reference that in this, where he can hear everything and see everything all at once, and he would have to focus. And he had that, he had the help from his mother. And then later on, you have the, you have Zod on our planet getting attacked by all of the senses, and him explaining how important, you know, he goes, I had a mother that loved me, that took care of me, and it taught me how to handle this stuff. So I thought all that was really good. I thought that played well into this movie. And dare I say, foreshadows, you know, Martha.
Yeah. Well, like I said, yes, that was really cool. Because, again, that's not something that you really, I don't think, has ever been explored, even in the comics. Like, Zod just shows up on Earth and, you know, has all these powers and is okay to deal with them. Whereas, like I said, Clark had to spend time.
Or at the very least, they were shocked they had powers.
Right. He had to spend time, you know, developing and learning how to cope with his powers as a kid. Whereas, as adults, you know, they just show up on Earth and have no problems at all. And so I thought it was really cool that they worked that into the story. Because if you think about it, it makes sense. Like, if you could all of a sudden just one day you're sitting there and you can see and hear everything that happens in the world, like, what would that do to your head? Like, you know, you'd go crazy. So I thought, I really liked the handling of that from both ends, from even when he was a kid to Zod and Feyora and the other ones, you know, when it happened to them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was cool. Something else that really I didn't like a lot about this movie is I disliked that they, like, the Lois Lane figured out who he was before he was even Superman. Like, that whole, basically, learning curve of her figuring out that he's Superman that we've had in every other iteration of the relationship between Lois and Clark. They just did away with all of that in this movie. Like, his secret identity is a very poorly kept secret in this movie. And again, you know, everybody jokes about how the glasses are a bad disguise anyway. But in this movie, like, how does everybody in Smallville not know that he's Superman? You know, you have Pete at the IHOP, who, you know, definitely knows he's Superman and definitely knows he's Clark. And it's like the worst kept secret in the world in this movie. But I think it's a small town mentality. Right, but I think, like, one of the best parts about the Lois Lane story is that on the one hand, she's like the world's greatest reporter, but she can't figure out that Superman's right in front of her this whole time. Right. And that's always a big source of discontent for her as a character, and they just completely did away with it in this movie.
Well,
I didn't like that, because that's a big part of the story that I think they just completely did away with. They jumped the shark and, like, just cut it right out. Because
see, I took it as they were doing a they took the Superman history of criticism, that how does everybody not know he's Superman, and how is Lois Lane, one of the greatest investigative reporters on the planet, is having a relationship with Superman and doesn't know, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think they flipped that over, and what they said was, we're going to make it like she knows. She's going to figure it out, and we're going to empower. We're going to have a stronger woman character. Not that Lois Lane hasn't been a strong female character, but that one part where it's like, how could she not figure that out? Well, you know what? In this movie, we're going to let her figure it out.
Well, the answer
we're going to write it that she's she figured it out.
They answer it in Justice League because the secret isn't the glasses. The secret is the glasses and the mustache. And that's how you disguise Clark Kent. And then you digitally
when
remove
you said
the
Justice League. Yeah. I thought you were talking about one of the animated. And
no,
like,
no.
And
then you when have you, to
as
digitally
as
remove
it, my
the
brain's
mustache
going,
later.
Yeah, so. My animated Rolodex is looking for a mustache, and I'm like, I don't see one. Then I realized what you were saying. Very funny.
Yeah, I know.
No, I didn't mind that at all.
Or really, it could be the Groucho Marx, the glasses with the nose and the mustache all attached. And then you just put that on and walk
well,
around with it.
He actually does start this movie with like a full beard.
Yeah.
So maybe he didn't have the mustache. Maybe he just shaved the beard and walked around for a few days.
Right.
And that's when he had the mustache.
The other thing I noticed, and I don't know why I noticed it in this movie, because it happens in pretty much every kind of action or superhero movie. And this isn't a knock on the Superman character itself, but just the way we watch movies. Like, I don't have superpowers. And I'm pretty sure you don't have superpowers either. But
I would have told you by now.
But I've never been in a situation in my life where my life depended on me or somebody around me having superpowers to save us. But somehow he ends up in like three of them before he's 30 years old, you know? Because yeah. As a kid, he's in a school bus that falls into a river. That's never happened to me. He drives right into a tornado that kills his father. I've never done that. He's on a ship that explodes. I've never been there. So it's like most people, I know bad things happen, you know, in the world. But most people, if it ever happens to them once in their lifetime, they've had bad luck. But yet somehow he's in them all the time, but he saves the day because he has superpowers. So
yeah,
it's like he's the unluckiest guy in the world because he keeps finding himself in these situations where he has to save everybody. This movie, it stood out to me, and it's not a Superman thing because, like I said, it happens in every single movie.
Well, but, otherwise the movie wouldn't be interesting.
Well, you're right, but it's just like how, in real life, like people don't find themselves in these situations every year, you know?
Right.
So.
In real life, cops don't do what you see in the movies. There's a lot more paperwork involved.
Well, yeah, like, I get it. Like I said, that's just
exciting.
It's just a function of the way we tell movies. But it just for some reason it was highlighted to me that. You know, he kept finding himself in these situations where, you know, he had to save everybody. And most of us don't fly off the, you know, our school buses don't go off into the river. And, you know, so.
Yeah. So, all right. Do we want to get into the, is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into the final climactic scene?
Well, I guess the other big non-Superman moment in this to me, and I know we're going to get to the end because that's the biggest one, but the fact that he let his father die. Superman
that
doesn't...
That was his father's request.
Right, but doesn't matter. Like,
right.
Superman doesn't allow that to happen. It doesn't matter. Like, if you were there and you could save your dad and your dad was telling you, hey, don't do this because we don't want everybody to see that you can help me.
Right.
You're going to help him anyway. It's like, it blew my mind when I was watching that. Like, to me, that bothers me even more than the ending of the movie. The fact that he let his father die to protect his secret, which is the worst kept secret in the world because he's already let the whole school bus full of kids see him pushing the school bus out of the water, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know how you rationalize that scene. I think
the rationalization is that scene was written to show the trust that he had in his father. And that's what anybody would do. And you look at that and go, I would save my father.
Especially
we would all do it and we don't have superpowers.
Right. Especially if saving him was a product of just, like, him not saving him is serving his own self-interest.
But it wasn't his decision, and I think that scene was set to show the faith that he has in his father. Maybe he thought it was a bad decision, whatever. But he that scene wasn't about him. That was about him and his father. And his father told him no, and he was doing what his father said. He was respecting his father's wishes, and he was trusting what his father says. And I don't agree with it either.
Yeah,
because
it's a hard
one.
That's a hard pill to swallow, like, for me. Like I said, a hero, this is a movie about heroes, and a hero doesn't let anybody, like, Captain America says it, we don't trade lives, right? Like, we don't let somebody die, especially just to save our own self-interest. Like, really, it wasn't even, like, a case of, I'm not going to let you die so I can live. It was more just like, hey, I'm going to let you die just so people don't know my secret that everybody right. already seems to know anyways. So, I don't know. Like yeah. I said, to me, that's the toughest pill in the whole movie to swallow is the fact that he lets his father die. I don't think that happens in any iteration of Superman ever that there's a way that would happen.
And that was shocking
yeah.
when you saw it. When the first time you see it, it's shocking. I don't like the scene because it's like sometimes when I watch the movie, I'll just skip it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know the scene. I don't want to see it.
Right.
But I think that scene serves a purpose. I think that's purpose is, as we'll get into it now, it's like he's part man. He's part human. And he's not 100% the Blue Boy Scout. He's part human. He's part Kryptonian. So he has flaws. And I think those flaws come from, like, his father. I don't necessarily agree. His father, Kent, I don't necessarily agree with his line of thinking. Like,
yeah.
Even before he let himself die, which I think now, dare I say, you almost have to do that scene after his father tells him, like, when he saves the kids in the bus.
Right.
His father tells him he shouldn't have done it.
Right. Which, again,
and he goes, what am I supposed to do? Let them die? And he says, if that's what it takes. I'm paraphrasing, but
no,
he's like,
you're right.
If that's what it takes, what, to keep my secret? I'm going to let a bus full of kids die so that so to protect myself? And I think, so here's the flaw, and this is what, you know, and we've done this episode, we've done this part where we go on to where we talked about all of these DCEU movies. This is the flaw that comes from man, and that's the darkness of man, and we talked about that with Wonder Woman, but that's his dad, his human father is the flaw.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I hate to say that.
Well, right.
But it's like,
yeah, his
thinking
was,
we're flawed as humans, but that's where that comes from.
Right. His character in this movie was also a little bit different from the way we're used to seeing him portrayed, too.
Yeah.
Because, yes, they've always had Clark's interest. Like, they've always wanted Clark to protect himself or, you know, keep his secret
right.
or whatever. But never at the cost of letting somebody die.
No.
Whereas
their biggest fear up to this, before this movie, I always remembered is like they were afraid like people were going to take them away.
Right.
As a child, like the government would come and take them away. Or it wasn't ever, as a kid, they were never worried about bad guys and anything like that.
Right.
They were just worried about, and that's kind of what they get into in this one. But it's, I just thought he went over the top with, you know, with the Jonathan Kent went over the top with the whole, you know, you've got to protect your secret.
He did. And like, you're right. He painted himself into a corner at the end where he kind of had to let himself die because you're right. You can't say kill a bus full of kids, but come and save me. So
right.
it's kind of like, damn it. I have to die because I can't be a
right.
hypocrite. So I'm
right.
just going to stand here and shake him off and tell him to let me die. But
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, that whole thing. But like I said, I can understand, you know, Jonathan Kent is a human, you know, flawed person anyway. So, I mean, his thinking didn't bother me as much as the way Clark, you know, didn't save him like that.
Right. But that's the thing is what you're, what you're doing there is you're taking previous Superman incarnations and saying the previous ones would have saved him, but in this one, he has been affected by his father.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I think in the context of this movie, it's consistent. The inconsistencies are the other Supermans, you know, that, and that's the difference. And then getting into the final scene when he's battling Zod, he tries to do it the right way. I felt like, and the more I watched this movie, and the more conversations I have of people saying, like, he shouldn't have killed Zod, he should have done something, he should have taken the battle elsewhere. I've had people tell me he shouldn't have had the battle there in Metropolis. It would, you know, all those people, because you get into Justice League and that picks up right there, and you see the,
well, BVS.
I'm sorry, yeah, BVS. So you see all the carnage going on, the buildings and the people dying, right, and you're like, oh, this is all Superman's fault. Superman never would have done this. Well, Superman didn't do this. You know, Zod did this. He picked the location. And I have one person tell me, well, Superman would have flown away so that he would have chased him. And we're like, well, you didn't see the movie, because that wouldn't have worked, because he was there for the sole purpose, and it had nothing to do with Superman.
Right,
he was there,
right,
to
Zod,
take over,
right,
the planet.
If Superman just flew away, Zod just would have let him go.
Would have been like, okay, bye.
Right, yeah, I get that. And yes, I mean, obviously the destruction of property was, I mean, it was, what happened in Metropolis was catastrophic. Like, it was basically like world-ending catastrophe happening in Metropolis. And God knows how many people died as they were smashing through buildings and, you know, buildings were crumbling to the ground. But that, like I said, I can go with you there. Like, I feel like somehow Superman would have tried to find a way to get to get them out of Metropolis. But I, like I said, from a movie perspective, I can, you know, that doesn't bother me as much. I'm not Bruce Wayne, so I'm not trying to kill him later because of it. But killing Zod, I mean, that's another big one. Like, there's no world in the, you know, and again, we keep comparing movies to comics, and I know they're not the same thing, but in 80 years of Superman, there is no iteration or world where Superman snaps Zod's neck for any reason to protect, like, even in the comics, Zod's been threatening to kill other people for 80 years, and there's always been another way to stop him.
Right.
You know, even in that scene in that movie where he snaps his neck specifically because, you know, Zod's using his, right, he's using his heat vision to cut a family in half. Like, if you have enough wherewithal that you can snap his neck, can't you just, like, twist your body to the side and let him shoot the other direction? Like,
right, there's, aim his head up.
Right, aim his head somewhere else. Like, if you can snap his neck, then you can move his chin to the left.
Right.
I get that he did it. Part of it was because of the family that was about to be killed, but the other part of it was that he knew in his brain that Zod was never going to stop. That even if he stops him from cutting these three family members in half, he's going to kill other people. Like, he's going to keep going. And I get the rationale that they were trying to put into his head, but there is no world in which Superman does that. Like, that, you know. I just don't know how you reconcile that. And I know that's because that's what we want to see in movies these days. Like, that's just a product of our entertainment. And we want to see, you know, we want to see Bruce Willis kill Hans Gruber. We want to see, you know, whoever kill whoever. And we wanted to see Superman kill Zod because that's what our movies become about. But I don't know. Like, I don't know how Superman justifies that. You know?
So, I let me try and justify it. It wasn't just about that scene. Okay, this is like what we said earlier, is like, it wasn't just about that family. It wasn't just about, like, the heat vision at that moment.
No, and I just said that.
Right. Yeah. But what I'm saying is you go back to the beginning of the movie, and it's like, that's Zod. He will never stop.
Right.
So what, I mean, he had no other choice. To me, he had no other choice.
But no villain is ever going to stop. Like, they're always going to continue to put other people at harm. That's what villains do. Like, whether it's Zod or whether it's Luthor or whether it's any villain ever, like, you might temporarily stop them, but they're always going to keep coming back. And the answer has never been to snap their necks.
Right, but you know? I feel like in this instance here, the character of Zod had lost everything. He has nothing left. So all he is going to do is kill. And that's basically what he was saying up until, and that's why he was going after that innocent family.
Right.
Had Superman stopped him from killing that family right there, he would have turned around and killed somebody, because his sole goal at this point, he cannot save Krypton. He can't do anything that he was made to do. So all he's going to do is kill. And that's what he had said to Superman. He had, when they were outside, he's like, I have nothing left. You've stripped everything else from me. I am going to take everything from you.
Right.
So his sole goal becomes that. And if that's his goal, it's not like Luthor trying to make a, you know, Lex Luthor trying to make a plan where you're like, well, he's not killing anybody at the moment, but I know he's scheming something and I'll stop that scheme. This isn't a guy that's going to turn around and scheme. This guy is saying, I am just going to kill everything in my path. And I feel like that's why he was like, he was trying not to kill him. He could have killed him any time before he actually did it. And he never snapped his neck until the last moment. He tried to reason with him. He tried to stop him so he could talk to him or whatever you're going to do. But he couldn't. And at that moment, he's like, it's done. He's never going to stop. And like I said, that goes back to the beginning of the movie where they're talking about they genetically engineered these people to be exactly what they want them to be. And Zod has no choice. And in a way, you feel bad for him. It's like he has no other path. He has no choice in his life. Right. And that's, you know, and that's what Jor-El was saying, was like, imagine a child that has choices.
Right.
Because none of them had them. And I just thought that at the end, it was like, you know, you've got Jor-El saying, imagine a child with choices, meaning Zod has no choice. This is who he is, and this is what he's going to do. And Superman, in this movie, the way they wrote it, he had to do what he had to do. Now, you know, whether you agree with it or not, or maybe Motor told me they should have, then you write a different movie. You make a different character do that. And I was like, well, then we're not having these discussions.
Right.
You know,
I don't know. Like I said, this is going to come off as very simplistic and, you know, moralistic, I guess. But what's ever the justification? Like, there's no justification ever to kill anybody. You know what I'm saying? So, well,
self-defense.
Well,
that's about it.
I guess I would argue that wasn't self-defense, though. You know?
Well, you're defending somebody.
It was defense of others.
It's defense.
I guess, but
it would be defense, yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a simplistic moral stance. Because, again, these are movies, and none of us in real life are ever going to be put in these situations. But
I hope I'm never confronted with somebody with heat vision.
Right. But I mean, I don't know. Like I said, we could debate it for days, and you know, there's never going to be a resolution or a right answer to it. I just feel like Superman would die himself trying to find another way to stop him before he, without killing him. You know what I mean? Like, fly him into space, do something. Like, there's, I don't know. It was almost just the easy way out. You know what I mean? It's like the easiest way to end this movie is just to have him kill him. And that's
right.
And that was it, you know.
Like another movie, he would have figured out a way to get him back to the Phantom Zone.
Right. Of course, that's what should have happened in most movies, but, right? But, I mean, that ship had already sailed. Like, everybody else was in the Phantom Zone, but
right,
he wasn't. So, I get that they really didn't have a way to get him back in there, but... I don't know. And I don't know what the answer is. Like, I'm not saying I have a better ending. And
right.
I don't...
Well, but I
and
think,
I don't say I know what the answer is. I'm just saying,
so
like,
let me put it this... Let's move it to this part, then. What's wrong with it being different? Because look at what it's created. Like you said, it's like we could talk for days on this. And if I walk into a comic book store, you're going to be... You can... This creates conversations. So does that mean it's some people might think this is a bad movie. Other people might think it's a great movie. But at the end of the day, isn't that the definition of a good piece of art?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like art's open to interpretation. And some people are going to interpret it good and some people are going to interpret it bad. But right. That's the definition. That's exactly what it should be. Had they made the movie that we've all seen in the comic books, we wouldn't even be talking about it anymore. We'd just be like, oh, that was good special effects, or hey, I remember that from the comic books. And then at the end of the day, you're just like, okay, what, you know, it's not, you know, it's controversial. There's nothing really to talk about.
Yeah, but I would say, like, my argument to that would be, like, go to Spider-Man. Like, go to, you know, Homecoming or any incarnation of Spider-Man in the movies. Like, Spider-Man didn't kill anybody in any of these movies. And they didn't feel the need, like, just because he was truer to his comic book character, didn't mean we'd already seen that movie. You know what I mean? Like, you can still have a great Superman movie and not fundamentally change the character from his comic book counterpart. Because Marvel's been doing it. And this, I don't want to get into a Marvel versus DC debate, but I mean... Like, I would have the same argument if Spider-Man started throwing people off buildings, you know, and snapping people's necks in his movie. And the argument wouldn't be just because it has to be different from the comics. Otherwise, we've already seen it.
Right.
So, I don't necessarily agree with that argument that just because he killed people, that made it interesting because it was different from the comics. Or... You know, because we can still see the same characters that we've seen in the comics and not feel like we've seen the movie. There's a million stories that you could tell for Superman where you don't have to have him snapping somebody's neck. In this movie, I get it. Like, they painted... This whole movie was written so that had to be the ending. Like, it was never... Right. It was never going to end any other way. But I'm going to go back and kind of agree with Motor. They say, write a different movie. Like... They wrote themselves into that corner, but they consciously made the choice to do that from the beginning.
Yeah, it's not like you get to the end and go, oh, crap.
Right. oh, crap, we don't know how to end this movie, so this is what we're going to do. Like, it was planned from the start, so in a way, I agree. Right. Like, plan it differently. Don't write yourself into that corner. Because the way the movie went...
You're right, it
had to end that way. So
right. But then you get into the part of, like, does the creator have the right to do that?
Well, obviously he did, because he did it.
Right. With DC's approval.
Right. But so, it was also very poorly received, you know? So just because it was... Just because you can do a thing doesn't mean you should do a thing.
Very poorly received.
I mean, it was the best of the bunch as far as critically acclaimed. Like, it kind of all went downhill from there. But there was still a lot of backlash even when this movie came out. You know, there was a lot of people complaining about it. So,
but I don't know if the backlash was it like anything else. Like, was the backlash the majority or the minority? It just was louder.
Well, you're right. You never know. But
you know what I mean? That's all I'm saying.
But I mean, but dollars speak louder than words. Like, none of these movies hit $1 billion, you know.
No, but at the time, the only movie that had was, you know, Avatar probably at the time. It's like a lot of these movies didn't, you know.
Right, but I mean,
they didn't do poorly though. None of them lost money.
Well, Justice League did, but
did it?
Yeah, at least that
lost money.
Those are the reports. I don't see how it could have possibly lost money, but the reports are that it did. Even doing $600 or $700 million, I can't see how it lost money. But yeah. I guess with the advertising and stuff they put into it, it did. But I mean, like I said, whether it was the vocal minority or majority or whatever, I mean, people vote with their wallets. So you can still judge a thing by its box office and see, you know, whether people enjoyed it or not. So I don't think it was, like I said, it wasn't, I mean, if it was that bad, we never would have got sequels or we never would have got Justice League. So it did all right. But there was plenty of people that were not happy with it.
Justice League's budget was like $300 million estimated. I just looked it up.
Yeah.
Opening weekend, it made $93 million opening weekend alone.
Yeah, which, it did a good weekend. Right, it did about $650 million, I think, total.
614, it says worldwide.
Okay, 614.
So it doubled its money.
Yeah, but you probably, but you have budget. To put in, I don't know, $150 million in advertising or whatever the heck these things do.
That,
you know?
That should be part of the budget.
Yeah, I don't know. The, like I said, it's just what it's just what I heard. I don't see how it. Honestly, I don't see how it could have lost money. It definitely underperformed though, compared to what they were hoping it would do. But. Now we're talking about different different movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah. No, so I mean I don't see my issue is it shouldn't be an issue that they made the movie. Whether you like it or not, that's your opinion. Right. No, I'm not talking to you
particular,
but the people, like, they shouldn't have made it. They should have written a different character. They should have, it's like, no, I actually enjoyed the movie. I get what they're saying. I get what they're doing, and that's, you know, it's fine. So my tie-in, which last week was supposed to be for Father's Day, is it's an Superman is an interpretation. And I put it out on Father's Day briefly about how, like, you know, we're all super, like, guys. It's, I didn't notice this until I was a dad. And then you see, you know, your kids look at you and you're like, ugh. And there was, I wish I had the song in front of me. But there's, it's just something about, like, dads are Superman. And that was ever since, you know, I became a dad. Then I've always looked at my dad as Superman because he, you know, like, you, the story on the playground, like, oh, my dad can beat up your dad when we were kids. You'd say everybody thinks their dad's the best. But then when I had kids, I'm watching my kid and it's like, you go to work, you come home, and we became Superman when we came home. So you get up, you go to work, you put your uniform on, you put your suit on or whatever. And then afterwards you come home and it's like, you take off your, you know, like, I don't wear glasses, but you'd take off your glasses and your kids just look at you and you're like, it's like, you know what I mean? And you as a father, we can do no wrong to our kids. You know what I mean? They trust us and they look at you like, it's like, okay, whatever he says, it's like, you know, I remember my dad used to tell me stuff and I'd believe him,
right?
Whatever it was. And then, as a father, you look at that, and that's why you look at this movie. But as a father, you look at it, and you're like, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, so that, to me, that was like, ever since then, I always wondered, like, was that Superman written that way? Like, like by guys that were fathers, and it was like, you know, this is a twist on it. And, because that's how I interpret it now. Obviously, as a kid, I didn't look at it that way, right. Although I did because I thought of my dad as Superman.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, Superman's always been an ideal, you know, more than anything. He was created as that, right? As the Superman, the perfect, you know, the perfect man.
Right.
That's what he's always been, you know, as a character. So, you know, I think Siegel and Schuster were young, like, they weren't parents when they created him, as far as I know. They were younger guys.
Right.
But I don't know, you know, maybe that's how they saw their father. You know, who knows? You know,
but
the inspiration came from somewhere.
Right. But your father is, like, when you're young, your father is perfect.
Right.
Your father, and then as you get older and you get smarter, you start to see the flaws in your father. And so, like, when you're a kid, you're just like, all of a sudden, you're just like, oh, wait a minute, Dad wasn't right about this thing, or he, you know, or he doesn't. And it's like, I'm starting to see it now. My kids are getting into their 20s, and I'm feeling like, you're like, oh, yep, okay. And I could see my kids looking at me funny, like, what, you don't know that? Well, that's not my area of expertise.
Right.
But when you were little, you only taught them stuff you knew everything about, right?
Right.
But then they get older, and it's like, my daughter's going to nursing school. My son's going to be an engineer, and we're talking about stuff that's way over my head. And you're like, your kids are looking at you kind of like people are looking at this Superman in the movie, like, this guy ain't perfect.
Right.
He's an idiot. You know, but as they're growing up, that's a lot of pressure. Because you're just like, you're trying to keep up that image. Like, all right, yeah, I'm Dad.
My kids, hey, my kids figured out I was an idiot long before they hit 20.
So. Yeah, well, so did mine. But now it's getting even worse. Yeah. So
My air of mystique didn't last nearly that long. But
yeah.
I think one of them was fresh out of diapers, but, you know.
No. But yeah, so that was my tie-in with Superman with my dad,
right?
And obviously with my kids. So, but that was for Father's Day. So happy Father's Day, belated.
Yeah, yeah, to same everybody. To y'all.
All right, we have anything else?
I don't think so.
Or do you want to keep on talking?
No, like
we
I said,
go on
we
for days.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there's never going to be an end to the debate because there's no right answer. And there's no changing it.
All right.
So.
Yeah, I know. So you've already said this is your top of the because this is the one other universe we hadn't done yet.
Well, that I guess
I thought of that.
It's,
so you would rank this as your number one out of the DCEU?
Well, no, not necessarily.
Or are you throwing Aquaman and Shazam?
Yeah, I was gonna say it's my number one out of the Superman Justice League trilogy.
Right.
I think Wonder Woman's a better movie. I think Aquaman's. I don't know if Aquaman's a better movie necessarily. Maybe not, but Wonder Woman definitely is. And Shazam, I even though he's part of the DCEU, I guess, I don't really consider them the same.
Until they tie him in.
Yeah, but
the,
honestly, he's
I mean,
that's
other
probably
than
my
putting him
that's
at
probably my favorite
Superman
one really,
at the end.
So.
Yeah. For you.
Yeah, that's what yeah,
I like
for me.
I think I like this better than I like it better than Wonder Woman. I like it better than I think it might be one of my top.
Yeah.
And unless Shazam, if they have a tie-in movie later, I might put Shazam ahead of it.
Yeah.
But I don't really could I don't know why. We could talk about that later, but I don't know why. I almost feel like Shazam's a different movie.
It is. Well, that's what I'm saying, cuz it's such a different tone and it feels like a different universe altogether. Even though we know that
right.
they are connected. They don't feel
well,
connected.
they put the Superman suit
right
at the end of the movie, but I think that was their only cuz like Aquaman was already in other movies. Wonder Woman was in the
yes.
movies, you know,
yeah.
they were all in Justice League.
Right.
You had no reference to Shazam up until the Shazam movie.
Right.
And so it just feels like it's in a different universe. And you know, I guess that's not fair, but that's kind of how I
right.
feel.
I guess just to go back from it, we're already 2.5 hours in, so I don't want to extend this too much longer. But, you know, we talked all about the movie. We didn't really talk at all about Henry Cavill and his portrayal of Superman or Clark Kent at all. So, I mean, I feel like we
I
should...
I thought he was great.
Yeah, so I feel like we should touch on that at least briefly.
Because
of the flaws from any of these movies are not because of Henry Cavill.
No.
Like, I think he is fantastic. I can't say he's the best Superman because Christopher Reeve, you know, I was 8 years old. Christopher Reeve is always going to be the best Superman to me.
Yeah.
But I mean, Henry Cavill was fantastic as Superman. Like he definitely, I mean, obviously he looks like Superman. You know, the guy's built like a ton of bricks, you know?
Nice save.
Yeah. Cause you know what I was going to say, but, yeah. You know, I mean, the guy is Superman in every sense of the word. So, I mean, his portrayal of Clark was great. His portrayal of Superman was great. I think any of the flaws or shortcomings come from, you know, writing and directing.
Right. I thought he did a great job of...
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. And Zack Snyder, like, do you blame him? Because he didn't write it.
It's his vision, though. I mean, Zack but Snyder the writers, is the architect of
the. But you, you the know. The director takes what's written and interprets it with the actors. He can't necessarily change what the writers have done.
Well, let me. I guess the parallel I would have to that is over on the Marvel side. There's different writers for every movie, but Kevin Feige gets all the credit for everything because he's the architect of the MCU. So
yeah, but he approves it, yes.
Right. So again, yeah. If you're going to say the same thing on the DC side of the street, Zack Snyder gets all the credit or all the blame because ultimately he's in charge.
Right.
If he doesn't like the writing, then you go back and tell the writers to change this. So
yeah, but
I think
is
ultimately
Snyder the
it
producer
is.
Or the director? Because Feige's not the director. He's the producer.
Right.
And Christopher Nolan was a producer on this.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, so it's like, if you're going to be upset about that.
I mean, Zack Snyder
you know
seems
what I mean?
To be, the, like, everybody talks about the Snyderverse. Like, he was definitely in charge of these movies.
And I honestly, I don't understand that.
Whether he was
I really
the writer or the director, he was the, he's credited with all of these movies. You know.
Right.
So.
And I like Zack Snyder. I like these movies. I like what, and I get that part, but I don't understand why it's he gets so much of the ridicule, and like you just compared him to Feige, but that's like compare that'd be saying Christopher Nolan in this case.
Well, I don't know,
because
I guess he's
Nolan
the architect.
Was a producer.
I mean, Feige is the architect of the MCU, and I don't, it doesn't matter what the titles are, like Zack Snyder has always been in charge of these. Like, he would get all the credit if they were good, so he should take all the blame
if
they're
not
good. Well,
that's not true, because you have, like, different directors for all of the different Marvel movies, and they do get, like...
They get credit, like, the Russo...
The
Russo brothers...
The Russo brothers
get
the Endgame and Infinity War.
But when everybody talks about the MCU, ultimately it's all boils down to Kevin Feige, you know? Like, he's the architect, he's the one that gets... You know, the lion's share of
the
credit.
He's
the
one that gets the
director.
Yeah, but he's the one that gets the directors. Like what's his name that got fired there? And from Disney, and now he did Guardians.
Yeah, James Gunn.
Everybody wanted him back.
Right.
You know, or it was, and he got a ton of credit for doing that, doing a great job. But, you know, Feige supervised it, but he was the director. Snyder was the director. That's all I'm saying. It's like, I don't know who you would... I know he gets all the... He's the head name that we all reference, but for some reason, Feige's the name that we reference at the MCU, but he's not the director.
Right.
He's just the producer. So, I mean, I just...
I don't know,
it's
but it's always
tangent.
Been his...
I'm just,
right, but it's always been...
Everybody wants
the
Snyder cut,
right.
And they want... Because they want the director's cut. They want to know what was... They want to know what was left on the floor and or what we didn't get to see. And, you know, basically, what did he want to give us but the producer's cut from him?
Right.
That's what everybody's talking about.
Right.
That's what I think it is. To blame him for the writing and stuff, though, it's like, I don't know how much control he has over that.
Well, I don't know, but it seemed like he had a lot. You know, whether he really did or not, we don't know. But, I mean, everything you read attributes everything to Zack Snyder. So,
yeah.
Whether that's a fair comparison, like, I don't know, because I don't know the inner workings over there either.
Right.
But every article you've ever read about the DCEU talks about Zack Snyder and, you know, him being in charge of it. So, whether he was or not, you know, who really knows? They're never going to put it out there. And they're more than happy to let him be the fall guy for everything, whether he was or not. I don't really know.
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody's stepping up now.
That's what I'm saying. Nobody's going to get up there and raise their hand and say. Now, granted, if these things were like billion-dollar movies, everybody would be raising their hand saying, "Oh, it wasn't Zack Snyder. I'm the one that wrote and directed this thing." But they're more than willing to let him be the fall
but
guy.
That, I think that's kind of my point. Right. Like, when a movie goes bad, it's the director. When it does well, it's like, who produced that?
Right.
All right.
Like I said, I just wanted to, before we ended, I felt like we can't talk about it without at least talking about Henry Cavill for a minute. And
no, yeah, I agree. It's like, I mean, I thought he did a great job with what he was given.
Yeah.
you know,
whether you liked him or not, he totally embodies
Superman.
Yeah, exactly. And whether you like these movies or not, one of the biggest crimes is that we really don't get a Henry Cavill Man of Steel 2, you know, because I feel like we really should have got that. So that's a big disappointment that we won't. And that really, for all intents and purposes, it looks like he's never going to be Superman again. So, you know, we'll see. We might like the next guy just as much. I didn't know who Henry Cavill was before he was Superman either. So,
right.
I mean, there's no saying that there can't be somebody else that's going to be just as good, because there definitely could be. But I think for what it's worth, he gave his all, and he was a great Superman. So.
Yep. Good call. Yep. That would have been an oversight. Yep. So wrap it up there.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, well, this was a long one.
It's 2 weeks worth of show.
It's 2 weeks worth of show, so give us a break. So, but as always, keep the conversation going on Twitter at @thebrightside_chat. Email us if you have any other questions. thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. We're on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, pretty much almost everywhere, I think, now. And we are on Facebook. And where are we, John?
Facebook.com/brightsidechat.
Yep, getting more active there.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's it. We will talk to you next week.
All right, take care, everyone.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to The Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors that we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listen to The Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.